I don't know whether Michael's going to join us tonight.
Really? Well, he's busy, though.
He's out at the bowling tournament. I said, so, join us from there. The Foley effects would be great.
Yeah, but it might be inconvenient on his end.
He's watching bowling.
It might be inconvenient on his end. You know, talking to family members and so forth.
Well, that's true.
Friends and family and all that.
I can't believe he'd put his family before this podcast.
Jesus.
Jeez. Almost live from across the USA. This is Late Night. Your hosts tonight are Joel, Barry, Barty, and Michael, the virtual bowler. Tonight, tough news about the Prius. Joel enjoys small town voting, and Barty has fun with printers. All that and more on Late Night. Cure him! And now, digitally gathering to listen to fake bowling sounds because Michael wouldn't let us hear the real ones. Here's Joel, Barry, Barty, and Michael! Welcome, everybody, to Late Night QRM, show number 207 from the Monadnock region in southwest New Hampshire. I'm Barry J.
Hi. This is Joel. I'm from Monadnock, too.
And from Central New York, Stug Hill Plateau, this is Barty.
No. Hi, Barty.
Hi, Barty.
You guys are making me hungry.
They're good.
Mm-hmm. They're yummy. Joel stopped over and dropped me off a bag of Boston beans, which I have never partaken in ever before. As you knew from the last podcast, if you listened to it.
Yeah.
And now, they're addictive.
Yes, they are.
So you'll probably hear this sound a lot.
You guys need to knock that off. You're killing me. I grew up eating that stuff.
Oh, man, they are good. Michael, may or may not, and probably the latter more than the former, make it tonight because his son is in a bowling tournament, and the afternoon session didn't get started till around 4:30. So they're very, very late.
All the luck to you.
Yeah. And so it's just the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get right into. I gotta look. Oh man, I gotta make this bigger. I'm looking at the soundboard on the iPad, and it's just, I can't read. From where I'm looking, I can't read the lettering. I have to get within like 3 inches of it. But let's find out what everybody's drinking.
Now everybody's died, so until our tears are dried, we'll drink and drink and drink and drink, and then we'll drink some more. We'll dance and sing and fight until the early morning light, then we'll throw up, pass out, wake up, and then go drinking once again.
Hey!
And Michael's starting off. Oh, that's right, Michael's not here. So I guess I'm next.
Yes.
I've got the classic Jiminy Coke, not to be confused with a Lemmy. Because it's Jimmy, not a Lemmy.
It's Jiminy.
It's Jiminy.
Jiminy-licious.
Jiminy-licious, that's for sure. I had to stop yesterday on the way home and get some podcasting supplies. And I got Jim Beam and I got a nice port. Because I've been lately sipping port after dinner at night.
No place to park your boat, eh?
Yeah, there's no port in the house. I mean,
well, there's a USB port all over the
port
place.
In a storm, yeah. There was no port in the storm for a while. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's yummy, actually. Did you see the Jim Beam Apple? Have you tried it yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Oh my gosh, that stuff's scary good. Scary good. But that, however, that is not what I'm drinking tonight. I am having my usual Christian Brothers brandy and Coke.
And I'm enjoying my usual J&B brandy.
Mm. Mm.
All right. And good Boston beans with my Jiminy Coke.
Yes, yes. If you just dunk them in your drink and let them sit there and just bob up and down and soak.
That might not be bad. Okay, let's see. Let's go on to Days of Our Lives.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
Oh, I slammed in too fast. Quick, Jiminy Coke. All right, in Days of Our Lives, I'll start off here. This may be a short show. Michael usually has 5 or 6 stories to tell.
He's got the most excitement going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he's got a pretty interesting life, hasn't he?
Yeah, we're bored. Boring. So I got to say, I'm just, and mine is talking about the frickin' weather. This time last week. Mm-hmm. Well, a little later than this time last week. It was, in the evening, it was fucking minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit here.
Woohoo!
And now it's 50 degrees this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, we bummed out on minus 26 here one morning.
Wow.
That was a day that I was sick as hell and the pipes froze.
Ah!
We lost, it was funny because when I first got up, all the water was working and then the cold water went out. A couple hours later, and I was like, uh-oh. So the first thing I did was run down to the basement to see if I could hear any spraying sounds. And when I couldn't hear that, then I took my coat off and crawled into the crawl space to start taking the insulation off the pipes to see if I could feel a crack somewhere where some ice had frozen a pipe and cracked it. Yeah. And I went through, I spent like, 30, 40, maybe 50 minutes going through all the pipes, taking the insulation off and putting it back on. So you have the tube type insulation underneath this, the regular insulation. So I'm taking all that stuff down, going through and escape. All right, there's no cracks. All we got to do is apply heat. So we went ahead and got a couple of heaters set up and got a fan to blow into the crawl space underneath the dining room kitchen area. And after 2-3 hours or so, sure enough, we had the faucets all, the cold water faucets all turned on, full blast. We started hearing some minor dripping.
Just,
okay. So we're running back downstairs, going to the crawl space, trying. I didn't disturb anything this time. I just went around looking to see if I could hear any telltale spraying noises.
Yeah.
You know, like a pipe had busted and water was gushing out. Because I definitely wanted to turn the water off real freaking fast.
Yeah.
But luckily, that wasn't the case. It was just simply had frozen up just enough without expanding, and putting the heat in there had cleared it up.
Nice.
But that was a close call, very close call.
Yeah. Jeez.
We got off easy. But man, minus 26, don't mess with that.
Yeah, really. Joel, how did your pellet stove manage the minus 20 degree?
House was nice and warm.
Nice. That's
our house, the whole main part of the house was all comfortable and stuff like that. It was just that one crawl space that doesn't get any heat.
Yeah.
Where the water pipes were that.
Well, this is the reason I asked Joel is because this is the first super cold weather that he's experienced with the new.
With the new house and the new house. Stove.
The newest, right.
New everything. Yeah. And
the new Joel escape.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that being said, too, where we still have areas of the house where we still have to finish putting the drywall on the ceiling means the heat passes right past the drywall to the insulation.
Yeah.
Which means that's even less holding the heat in the house.
Right.
And, the weirdest thing, since we've had the stove, I've never turned this puppy up to turbo all the way up to 9. And with that severe, bitter, crazy cold, we were doing that, turning it down to about 70 when we, you know, leave for work.
Yeah.
Come home from work. The first night, the day we didn't do that. So it was like, I think it was turned down to something like, Jesus, I want to say it was like 55. Came home and the house was freezing cold. And so it's turned up, you know, fill the hopper, turn the stove up. It still hadn't turned it up to turbo, but turned it up to like 85 or setting number 8. And inside of 40 minutes, 45 minutes, it was roasting.
Wow. Nice. Yeah.
Now, granted, you know, when you have a pellet stove, anybody who has pellet stoves or wood stoves or a coal stove will know a lot of times you still use a box fan in the wintertime.
Because
the stove's radiating the heat. You use that fan, you know, just like Barty was saying, to blow that heat to other areas of the house.
Right. Push it around.
Right. So where the room that the pellet stove's in, which is in the front of the house here, honest to God, it was like 95 degrees. And then with the fans blowing one towards the western side of the house where the kitchen and the living room are at, you know, it was still, it got to the point, it was like 74 in there.
That's nice. Wow.
So, and that's, you know, now it still wasn't turned up to uber turbo. I don't know what that is. Well, supposedly they'll put out 48,000 BTUs.
Nice.
Well, on turbo. And this is the small Harman pellet stove, the smallest one they've ever made.
Wow.
You know, if I had a stove like that, I would add piping to heat up the crawl space because I would have plenty to spare.
Yeah, that's true. That.
Yeah, I mean, and my basement, which, like we all, as we all know from previous podcasts, which is underneath the bathroom. It's not a crawl space. You actually enter it from inside the house, oddly enough, the Uncle Fester hatch. the grandpa hatch.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, you lift up a section of the floor and boop, 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 walk down the ladder, and then you're into the, it's just like a utility room.
Mm-hmm.
Did I go down there? No. Why? Because it's cold. But at no point did our pipes freeze at all.
Nice.
You know, now granted, I did everything in PEX, which expands. But I guess, it stayed warm enough down here. I never had a point. At any point where water froze in the house, it's going to the bathroom or the kitchen. So I was very, 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 very happy about that.
Yeah.
And just as a footnote for those who don't know, when water, let's say you turn on your cold, will usually freeze before you're hot. And always look at the corners, the joints where there's a 90 degree elbow.
That's
where it'll freeze first. So when you look at a straight run of pipe, I'm not saying it can't freeze in a straight run of pipe, but the freeze will start at a 90 if it's in copper pipe, especially
because there's more surface area. I guess
there's more surface area there where it can sit, and there's also more surface of the cold metal.
Yeah,
in relation to the water at the elbows. So if you thaw out the elbows, 9 out of 10 times, the rest of it will get flowing.
Good to know. Thanks, Joel.
Yeah,
well, I try.
Damn, this show's friggin' educational.
We've never had problems with our
pipe freezing?
Our pipes because, well, you know, we got a full basement and it's heated. So
right, you're not going to have a problem.
The only the only thing I do sometimes when it gets like minus 20, we only have one set of pipes that go up near the outside wall, and they're the ones that go up to the kitchen sink. And all I do is open the doors to the underneath the kitchen sink. So that the air can circulate better.
Yeah, the cupboards, yeah.
Yeah, the cupboards, just in case.
And we've never had problems with freezing, with water pipes freezing. In the past, where we've run into troubles was in some of the heating pipes in the crawl space freezing up. You know, because we have baseboard heating.
Yeah.
And the old furnace used to come on and, like, heat the house up. We set it for 70, but it would heat the house up to 71 and sometimes 72, and then it would just, like, sit
idle. Off. Yep.
Yeah, until the house got down to, like, 69, 70. Then it would try to come back on and try to heat it. Yeah, and the crawl space area would freeze. And a lot of times in the past, we would go through and already, when we knew we were getting below zero temperatures, would set up heat and fans blowing into the crawl space. Early on, and we never had a problem after that.
Yeah.
But the new furnace kind of fooled us because we were so used to worrying about the heating pipes.
Yeah.
The new furnace comes on for a few minutes, turns off. It waits, it turns on for a few minutes, and turns off. It's not the big wide range that the old furnace had.
Yeah.
Right.
So when it was like going down below zero, our furnace was almost always on. It was coming on, going off, going on, going off. So I was like, okay, well, the heating pipes are going to keep warm enough that we're not going to have to worry about it.
Right.
And sure, that was true. We didn't have to worry about the heating pipes. It was the water pipes this time that got us. The first time we've had this house.
Well, I can just tell you that with the new ceiling fan, which we put on in reverse in the wintertime, because we have a vaulted ceiling, cathedral ceiling, whatever you want to call it, in the breezeway, which is the family room, it helps immensely circulating the heat and keeping that room warm. It's not so, you used to get spotty cold,
and
now it just stays all warm. But I will say that our gas heater in there, which is one of those gas fireplace-like heaters, it was on, and it stayed on all night. It didn't cycle at all.
Nope. Not with that kind of cold.
No. And actually, the oil heat was pretty much on full-time, too.
Right.
For the rest of the house.
It was crazy uncharacteristically cold.
Yeah.
You know, well, actually, like the news has said, it was record-setting.
Yes.
So, it's all kinds of special, what's the word I'm looking for? Compensations have to be made because of the fact that, you know, most systems aren't designed to deal with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, not, well, I want to say this far south for our friends in Canada, especially northern Canada, where systems are designed to deal with that kind of cold on a regular basis. You do put them in and install different ones.
Mm-hmm.
Same with your cars. It's funny. I was listening to Dave Broadbeck was talking with on the Broken Area with his wife, who's her name escapes me right now. Why?
me too. It was there and it was gone.
I can hear her voice. I can hear the podcast in my head, and for the life of me, I apologize anyway, Dave, and to your wonderful wife, but I was listening to your guys' podcast, and sure enough, when he had said, oh, yeah, we plugged the car in, and I thought, you know what, because that really kind of hit me as it tickled me in a sense, because the car it's set up for cold weather. It's a cold weather overnight plug-in for the block heater for a gas engine car, and oddly enough, my wife's car has the same thing, because it originally was a main car
from Northern Maine,
and I remember fishing around underneath the hood, and what in the Christ is this plug doing? Oh, son of a bitch, this thing's got a built-in block heater. So you can plug the car in at night so it'll start that next morning. I thought, oh, okay. So when Dave said that, it made me think, oh, yeah, the car started with no problem. And which I think we were all doing. And I know I went out that night and I thought, okay, time to fire up the cars because I don't want the gasoline freezing in the lines. And which is very rare. You put, gasoline antifreeze in them anyway, which... definitely helps, but it's not 100% guaranteed to work. And so I fired up the cars and let them all run for 45 minutes, both cars and the truck.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that they were going to run and the gasoline wasn't going to freeze up. And then the next morning when I went out, same thing. It's like, oh, shit, it's freaking cold out here, man. And everything was starting.
I'm familiar with that from living in Alaska.
Yeah.
There are outlet poles in all parking lots in the Fairbanks area because you can't leave a car parked outside in the middle of winter in Fairbanks and expect it to start after a number of hours. All our cars had block heaters, and if you were willing to spend the money, which was worthwhile, you could get like a circulator that would warm the water and circulate it through the engine.
Yep.
You know, and you'd have, you know, an oil pan here to keep your oil fluid.
Rather than solid.
Yeah, exactly. Because it doesn't take much to make oil become a rock.
Well, I had both cars in the garage, but even the garage got down to 25 degrees on that night, which is, I had to bring the beer in. Yeah, I was afraid about the beer because, usually you can leave it out in the garage and, you know, it'll sometimes get down into the 50s or 40s, and that's okay. That's actually good beer. But I said, yeah, -20, let me get the beer in. So.
Yeah, you want to be able to drink it, not lick it.
Yeah. So, and by the way, Isabel.
Isabel. Thank you, sir.
Yes, I actually went on their site and looked it up because I said it begins with an I. It begins with an I, and I couldn't remember.
I love listening to that show.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. So, the car, like I said, even though it was 25 degrees, let me do that again. The Prii has a thermos built in, so it takes some of the coolant, the fluid, and puts it into, and pumps it into this thermos. So the next time you start the car, it doesn't start cold.
Oh.
Just one of those things it has.
So it's got a built-in heated thermos for hot starts on cold morning.
Yes.
But it doesn't have a way where it doesn't go, rrr, rrr, rrr.
Well, that, no.
Japanese forward thinking.
And so anyway, so Joel, let's move on to the next topic.
Oh, okay. Well, the next topic, titled Electricity, It's Not Overrated. it was a very valid concern here at the house, because my generator carburetor is still in pieces. And I was worried about it all along. I'm thinking, oh, God, please don't let us lose power here at the house.
Because we had that ice storm.
Yes, and I'm thinking a tree limb comes down across the lines. I live way the hell up dirt, much like your guy self, except my roads are dirt rather than paved.
Mm-hmm.
And they are just lined with trees. I mean, everywhere. And I'm thinking, oh, one frozen branch comes down, bloop, takes us out. I'm really fucked. And I'll be scrambling to borrow a buddy's generator and then still wire up the outlet and tie it into the panel and the boom. So, as much as I worried about it here at home, oddly enough, while I was at work, and a lot of the folks, actually all the production folks had gone home. I was out on the manufacturing floor, and I'm doing a few things here and there, a software upgrade on something, and all of a sudden, flicker, flicker, boom! The power goes out. On, off, on, off, on, off, on, off.
Oh, God. That's the worst. That'll blow things left and right.
It'll blow power supplies. Yeah. It'll blow up hard drives. Computers flashing. They were browning out. I'm running around like a frantic, like a chicken with its head cut off, trying to power everything down so it won't, power spike and blow stuff up. Well, I got the most of it. But I did find out by the next day. Let's just say I had my work cut out for me because I was chasing down computers and robots all freaking day for 2 days. Placing stuff because it fried. Yeah. If it was on the verge, it definitely was pushed over.
That's the worst kind of outage when it sits and goes.
Yes. I'm thinking, not that I, if it was going to happen somewhere, I'd rather it happen at work than at home. So it was, that electricity thing, I'm a big fan, and just check your generators, guys. That's all I'm going to say.
I tested mine, was it last week? Week before last. Mm-hmm. I tested mine.
I'm a little tardy to the testing party. It's kind of funny because when the temperature was dropping, I just kind of looked at my wife and says, the guys on the show were talking about testing their generators. I kind of wish I had plugged ours in, and maybe gave it a whirl. And she goes, "Oh, why? It'll start." And I says, "Honey, we don't know that. We haven't started it in such a long time." And I says, "Well, didn't you try it last summer?" I says, "Well, yeah, that was last summer when it was nice, rosy, and warm." And I keep trying to tell her to leave it plugged in. Leave it plugged in.
Yeah.
I says, "Well, if you're not using it, why does it need to be plugged in?" I says, "Because it keeps the battery charged." Mm-hmm. So that when you want to auto start it, it starts.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And she's like, "But we're not using it." But it still keeps the battery charged.
Yes.
So, you know, she's like, okay, but all right. So go ahead and plug it in if you want. And I'm thinking to myself, well, yeah, that's great a week ago, but not so great now. Mm-hmm. So we did plug it in, you know, so, but luckily we didn't have to worry about it, but it just kind of cracks me up, you know. Well, you're not using it now, so why does it got to be plugged in?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
I'm not using the toaster either, but it stays plugged in.
Honestly, the funny thing is, you know, I don't know if you've mentioned as much or if she's aware of it, because a lot of people, I don't think, some folks really aren't. Batteries will discharge by default if not charged up or used.
Right.
So a generator, right. So she's, if you don't have it, and then the other thing, a trickle charger or a battery tender, which is what you have, doesn't use electricity until it needs it. And then it shuts itself off. There's a built-in relay switch. So it tops off the battery and then shuts off.
Well, this is an adapter that plugs in, that came with the generator.
Yeah, it's a wall wart,
just
right?
Just for that purpose. Yeah, It's a thing you plug. It's just like, you know, a regular AC adapter, but the generator only uses it, like Joel says, when it needs it.
Yeah, and you know. And what I found out too is when the generator's running, you know, this is a generator. It generates electricity.
Nope.
It doesn't charge the battery though.
Nope. Doesn't have a built-in battery charger on it.
No. Well, I always wondered if I could take the battery, you know, the wall wart, and just plug it into the side of the
Jesus, you're gonna make a perpetual motion engine.
I meant just to keep the battery charged. Yeah.
And actually, you could while it's running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you this, Barty. In January's test, I went out there, used the starter, boom, kicked right over. Okay. February's test, not so much. I ended up, tried several times, let it sit. Tried several times. I poured some more gasoline in it, thinking it might be getting a little low. It's still nothing. Finally, a cap of seafoam went in it. Lots of smoke for a little bit, but it kicked right over.
Yeah, that seafoam was some amazing stuff.
I have a feeling I put the seafoam in and let it sit for a little bit, because I have a feeling I might have had some water in it that froze up.
You know what what I do when I put my motorcycle to bed for the winter?
Yeah.
I drain all the gas out of the tank. I run the bike until it stalls so I know there's no gas in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put a bunch of seafoam in the tank and kick it over a few times and get seafoam all through the system and then turn it off.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Well, I've learned, thanks to Joel and Michael, with the generator now too, is I don't shut it off the normal way. I just I cut off the fuel and just let it run out. Yep. So there's fuel in the engine part.
Ah, I did not know that. That's a good tip. Good tip.
Yeah.
See, this show just keeps getting more and more educational. We need PBS funding.
They can buy the beer.
That's there you go. Actually, we might have a better chance if we move it to Canada and make it something more like the Red Dream Show. You guys ever see that show?
I remember watching it. I don't know whether it's on anymore, is it?
Oh, I don't know. It's not. It's not. But they had a run of a number of years, and that was one of the most incredible shows. And the people in Fairbanks, Alaska, bought into that show in a big way.
Hmm.
They while we were stationed there, and you know, we ran into that show before we got there, and we were surprised by the attention that was drawn to that show in the Fairbanks area. They just loved Red Green. And they invited him to come visit Fairbanks and spend a week there, and they had a whole week of Red Green type events for him to witness and participate in and things like that. They, no shit, got a hold of a van that looked just like his van, painted it up exactly as his van was painted, and that's how they picked him up at the airport. In a van that looked just like his own goddamn beat-up piece of crap van.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And then they set him up in a hotel room and things. But it was the whole week. And they did this for like 2 years in a row while I was up there. And it was like so crazy. And, you know, being a fan of the show, it just really kind of cracked me up.
Yeah. That's cool. That is cool.
Yeah, that's neat. You know, I only caught a few of those, and then it went off the air. So I only caught it at the end. I started hearing about this, and I should go find some place where I can catch them and watch.
You should.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's got to be some place in Canada you can download those episodes from, because they were the most ridiculous, most hilariously fun things I've ever seen. And you know, all of it was based around duct tape, the handyman's secret weapon.
Oh my God! Yes.
You know? Yeah. And they had like segments that were called like the winter of our discount tent. You know, where they talk about, you know, disastrous camping attempts in the winter, you know. it was all like really stupid stuff, but it was hilarious. Just the way it was presented.
Yeah, I wonder if they're on it's on Netflix or something.
He was looking. I'll take a look while you're talking. Actually, no, I gotta talk next.
You're next.
Actually, I was just gonna comment. As Barry and we all talked about in our last show, as far as sayonara, politicians.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I don't think we really touched on was
because we hadn't gotten to election day yet.
That's right. So a good point. Really good point. Glad I put that in there. So yeah, I went and voted here in town, and which was really cool because you know, you guys ever watched? I'm sure you have. We're talking about old shows. That TV program, Northern Exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, about Sicily, Alaska, the fictitious town, Sicily, Alaska. Well, it's not quite that role, but pretty damn close to it where I live as far as how things are laid out and the overall feeling. And where the town voting polls are also happen to be upstairs in the back off the old auditorium of the Main Street building. And, you know, with the old creaky floors, and it smells like an old church kind of thing.
Yep.
And, so, you know, or up the stairs and do your thing, and here's my license, and oh, okay, see where you live, and blah, 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 and okay, so then here's your, you know, and then you do the card and all that, and then you go into the voting poll.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought it was so cool. It was such a small town, hometown kind of feel, you know, in the voting polls, and then you see your neighbors. Folks who live in the same town as you, they're not going to be from other towns.
Yep.
And you get to meet the neighbors that way. And so and so lives on such and such a road. And the old man Jed back there, and blah, 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 blah. Meet the police chief. And, you know, it was pretty darn cool. It was a very, very awesome experience. Very much so different than like when I'm living in the city, you know, and you go to any one of X number of elementary schools, because the city I lived in had voting districts.
Yeah.
And here, everybody shows up at the same damn place, which happens to be next to Rick and Diane's Pizza Shop. And that's right next to the Main Street to the Town Hall building.
Yep. I know where
Yep. So you literally come out of the Town Hall building, and everybody's like, well, hell, let's go to Rick and Diane's and order pizza and a sub. So, I mean, that's what I did, too.
Yeah.
So brought it home for me and me and my beautiful bride to have supper, and it was just really awesome meeting a lot of the locals, meeting the townsfolk.
And after you've been there for a couple of years, you'll walk up and they'll say, "Oh, hi, Joel, how's it going?"
They already do that at Rick and Diane's. They know me literally on my face. I walk, "Hey, buddy, how you doing?" They may not remember my name.
Yeah, but well, I'm talking about when you go to vote, they'll remember you.
They'll
call you by name. Yeah, because Jaffrey is just like that too. It's small town, and as you know, when you lived there, we used to go to the high school to vote, but they I forget what was going on. They were redoing the gym one year, and it is quite a disruption to the school when they vote there. So that one year when they were redoing the gymnasium, they moved it to the VFW.
Yep.
Down on 202.
Oh, 202, yeah.
And that worked out so well That's where we vote now. We go to the VFW, same thing. If there's a little bit of a line, you get in line, you see your neighbors, you have a chat, you just walk up and he goes, okay, Barry, and I'm an independent now, which confused them because before I wasn't. And they said, oh, they're looking at him. Oh, you're or non-declared, as they call it.
Non-declared.
Non-declared. And I said, yeah, well, you know, I'm doing the anti... thing. So I said, Bernie doesn't need my help on the Dem side, so I'll vote Republican this time. Yeah.
Because of a presidential election, you have to declare a party.
No, the president, for the primaries, yes.
For the primaries, right. So yeah. I was surprised too. I walked in and they said, Democrat or Republican? I said, it's none of your damn business.
That's what I wanted to say. No.
Yeah. I said, wait a minute. I said, I'm not independent, non-declared. He said, no, for a presidential primary, you get one, either the pink ticket or the blue ticket,
which
is Republican or Democrat.
So you pick one, and that means, and then they write it down, okay? Yeah. So that means whatever you pick to vote for, you're now a member of that. So you go vote, and then as you're leaving the thing, there's a table there and for non-declares, and say you go over to them and you say, I'd like to go back to undeclared.
Yep.
And they look up at your name and go, how did you vote this time? And I said, well, this time I voted Republican. They circle that and then you sign and you're undeclared again.
Now you're undeclared again.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny listening to you guys go through this stuff because that was the way I grew up voting.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in New Hampshire.
Right, right.
So, like, to me, this is like the back of my hand. But I go to New York and they're like, well, you can't vote in the primary unless you're either a Republican or a Democrat. And I says, well, I hate both parties, so I'm not voting in that primary then.
I mean,
so, like, it's like, what are you talking about? Why can't I be independently minded and just vote for whatever candidate I want to vote for? Oh, no, you can't do that in New York. We're a fucking fascist state.
Yeah.
Sorry, Barry, you can beat that out. No,
I won't. Because I totally agree with you.
I was raised as independent as you could freaking be.
You know,
as far as I'm concerned, there is no good political party.
No.
They all suck, you know? And, you know, I like the way New Hampshire does it.
Yeah.
I don't understand why other states don't do it the same way. I mean, I'm sure the Democrats and Republicans just absolutely hate it.
Yep, because they don't like
there's no party loyalty.
Right.
No.
And the undeclared can decide on that day. I'm
going to
vote Republican or I'm going to vote Democrat.
And I was watching it in the news and they said most politicians, when it comes to running and going through the New Hampshire primaries, really get nervous about New Hampshire. They get exceptionally nervous about New Hampshire because New Englanders in New Hampshire will say, no, you're not going to put me in a box. You're not going to put me in a corner. You're not going to put me in a box and put the box in a corner. I'll make up my own goddamn mind when I'm damn well good and ready.
Yeah.
And it'll be in any direction that I so choose it to be. You can't. So it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
This is going to swing this way. This is going to swing that way.
Yeah.
It's like I was watching that on the news and they were saying, it's very, very tough.
Uh-huh.
And more people I bumped into, at least locals here in town, same damn thing.
Yeah.
See, right up the right. And I went to the little table afterwards, other back, and I said, I want to be registered as undeclared.
Yep. And I remember, and you probably do too, Joel. Of course, now you go, and it's kind of like one of those, computer matrix. Well, I used to, when we were kids in elementary school, we used to take these standardized tests, and they were called, for some reason, they were called Iowa tests when I was a kid. I guess because some university in Iowa came up with them or something. I have no idea, but they called them the Iowa test. But you know what I'm talking about, the multiple guest type thing you fill in, and the computer reads it. Yeah. And of course, now we've got this fancy reader. So you go and fill in your dots, and then you go and you put it through the machine that reads your paper. But when we first moved to Jaffrey, it was different. It was like you got the paper ballot and you basically put an X or whatever next to who you wanted, and then you put it in a big wooden box at the end. And I remember being there once when the polls opened, and there was a big deal. It was like a ceremony almost. The town speaker would get the box, open it up, look into it, and then hold it up and you know, circle it around so everybody could see that the box was empty. Yep. And then they'd close the lid and they'd put the latch on it, you know, the lock on it. And then voting could begin. And I was actually privy back then. Afterwards, I was asked one time to help count the votes.
Really?
And so I did that. That's pretty cool. And you know, at the end, there was these counting teams. And there was always two people worked together, usually one from the Republican side and one from the Democrat side. And one would just double check the other, and you'd sit there and count the votes. They split up all the ballots, and you count up the votes, and you know it was cool. But now we small towns have these thingamajig things that read that paper with the dots all over it.
Well, you don't want any chads.
Yeah. No. Well. No.
Oh, no. Yeah. Right. No hanging chads.
We don't
no
have hanging any hanging chads. Chads. We might have an accidental fill in.
Yeah,
of a pencil mark or something, but you know.
Oh my goodness!
But we're done. We're done here in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, because this was
November,
we got to be the first in the nation. No, actually, we got more voting coming up. We got to vote on the local stuff because they keep this presidential one separate from everything else. So we have yet another voting time to come up. I don't know what the date is. And then we got town hall or town meeting, mm-hmm. Where we go and spend the day and people get to say their piece. And then we vote on some more stuff there. And then I think that's about it until November. So we got two more times in the spring and then one time in November.
Yeah. Well, at least the town meeting things are things that are important locally.
They are. My only problem is with those, and as you know, you only get a couple days off on the weekend, and I don't mind going to town meeting, except for you get these fucking blowhards that come up, grab the mic, and sit there and just go on and on about nothing, repeating
because
themselves. Yeah, and it's like, come on, we got you after the first three sentences. We got what your idea is and what you stand for. Pass the mic to the next person.
Captive audience.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and it ends up being an all-day event. And, yeah, when we first got up there, it was interesting. It was fun. Now it's like, okay. And you don't vote until the end. That's the problem. So now it's like, okay, we'll sneak in late. I don't want to listen to all the bullshit. I don't want to listen to people thanking other people for such a great job that they're doing here and there and everywhere. And, oh, God, please. I got 2 days off. I don't want to spend one day listening to you yokels here. Fine towns members.
Yeah, what?
Anyway, so it's over in New Hampshire, and you know the results.
Yep.
And it's now South Carolina's voting today, or at least the Republicans in South Carolina are voting today.
The Nevada results on the Democrats have come out.
Yep, and DeHill won.
Slightly.
Hillary won, but not by much.
I like that Hillary.
Well, I don't care whether you're right or left.
Or just
everybody should agree on one thing. That woman should not be given any kind of power whatsoever.
That woman should
She should be in jail.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. That woman should be in jail.
You can ask Barty. You can ask me who have...
knowledge about these kind of things.
Yes, and we'll tell you that if anything was found with her, and any of us, we'd be in jail waiting for trial, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's strictly tells you the consequences, and for some reason, she gets a free ride.
I don't understand that.
I don't either. I mean, and I know people at work who are you know, left thinking or progressive people, and they say, "No way in hell I'm voting for her," for that reason.
Well, it's freaking dangerous. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
If she has her own private, unclassified, unprotected email server running as a Secretary of State, mm-hmm. what if she does the same stupid stunt as a president? It's like, my God.
Well, and it comes
this is just so ignorant. It's so ignorant and illegal. Yeah.
And it comes down to this, whether you're left or right or whatever, even if you agree with what she's saying, which is just words, her actions speak louder than words. And in this case, those actions, they're criminal. They're criminal.
It cost former Marines their lives, plus the folks who worked in the embassy.
Yeah, well, that's just one thing. Yeah, the emails themselves have created, have caused many other things which we can't speak about here.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, she should not be trusted for any type of information.
It blows me away that the people investigating the contents of her email server cannot read the emails because they don't have a high enough classification level. Mm-hmm. And that's what she had on an unclassified email server? I mean, please. Why is this lady not in jail?
And she's saying, oh, well, they post-classified them after the fact. And it's like, you know, when you get this security clearance, you are taught things. And you know what's classified and what's not classified. And it's up to you to make those decisions if you think it's misclassified. Yeah. And she did not or didn't care. I don't know what it was, but she's a dangerous person. And that has nothing to do with your politics. She is just, she was entrusted to do something. She was trained on how to do it, and she just ignored it completely.
She was completely reckless, totally reckless.
Yeah.
And that's like ultimately dangerous to the security of this nation.
So that's why, as an undeclared person, I was looking at the polls. And if Bernie had not been so far ahead in the polls in New Hampshire, I would have gone and voted on the Democratic side for Bernie because I did not want her to win that thing. And as is, even though Bernie blew her away, and the popular vote, whatever you want to call it, they walked away with 15 delegates apiece. Why? Because of the super delegates, and she has all the super delegates.
That's bullshit.
Well, okay. Now here's the thing, and we have a few people at work that are really, really gung ho Bernie supporters.
Yep.
Some young people. Matter of fact, they're. I said, I'm tired of seeing you guys on TV. They're in his commercials. and I told them, I said, he can't just barely get by winning. He has to blow her away in every state. And they said, well, why? And I said, the reason being is, even though the super delegates are for Hillary right now, they can change their mind. And the only way they're going to change their mind and vote for Bernie is if he totally blows her away in all the states, because then they'll, of course, you know, they're politicians, right? So they're, you know, they don't want to look bad that they're supporting the wrong person. So they will come around to Bernie and they will switch. But if it's even, they're going to stick with Hillary because she's part of the establishment.
God damn it.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. You make a very good point, Barry. The Democratic establishment will hold true as long as she's close. And she did win in Nevada, so
it was Bernie's close.
Losing ground. Yeah, but the thing is that he did not blow her away, let alone win.
Yeah, no.
She slightly beat him.
Yeah.
So,
well, next week I think the Democrats vote in South Carolina, so it'll be interesting to see what happens down there. Yeah. So I really do. I mean, I get sick of hearing about. I get sick of the commercials. I get sick of seeing politicians coming up and telling you bullshit to your face, and both sides do it and stuff. But I do love the process, and I do love watching the process. Yeah, that's why I enjoyed Anthony's and Dave's podcast. That I'm stammering here and delaying because what's left? I couldn't think of the name of it. What's left?
I thought you were waiting for like an internet.
No. I liked it because they discussed how the political process worked and the history and things like that. And it was very interesting because I knew nothing about Canadian politics or how it worked. And I listened to that podcast and I said, okay. Now, one thing they haven't discussed, and I'd like to find out, maybe they can, because I think they may still be doing them, but not as often. You know, you guys, I know that there's this thing called a riding. And I know it's a district. It's a voting district. But I want to know what is the story behind them being called ridings. What's the history? I kind of have an idea, but I'd like to know what the real story is. And I think that would be kind of interesting for them to discuss on a what's left down the road. So that's just a suggestion. I could go look it up. I could Google it and find out, but I don't know. For us Americans, it would be interesting to listen to the podcast and hear about that. So
that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah,
good suggestion, Barry.
Yeah. So, okay, shall we move into a Geek's Corner?
Oh my God! Please.
They see me mowing. Front lawn. I know they're all thinking I'm so wide and nerdy.
Think I'm just too wide and nerdy.
Think I'm just too wide and nerdy.
Can't you see I'm wide and nerdy?
Look at me, I'm wide and nerdy.
All right, and you thought we were getting out of politics, but I've got the first topic here in Geek Corner, and it's what was in the news this week: Apple versus the U.S. government. And as you know the story, apparently the two terrorists that shot up the California, I forget what it was. What was it? It was
a government office.
It yeah.
Social service office.
Services, yeah.
One of them had an Apple phone, an Apple 5C. And so now the government, and if you have an Apple phone, whether you know it or not, if you can put a passcode on it or, you know, digit. And, if you do it 10 times,
locks it out.
Do it 10 times, it'll erase everything on the
phone. Yeah, it turns it into a brick.
Yeah. Now, for people that back up their phones, that's not an issue. If that happens, okay, once you unbrick it, you can always go and reload the phone. But apparently these people did not, you know, back it up onto iTunes. And so the government has come in because they want to try to do a force entry into the phone by just sitting there and trying every possible set of numbers,
passwords.
And so there's two things. One, the delay, there's a delay between each try, and two, it will brick the phone after 10 tries. So they went and asked Apple to if they could unlock it, and Apple said the only way that they could unlock it is to give them a operating system that has been tweaked so that it turns those things off.
Well, they said it was a firmware update they had to do, right?
Right.
You know, that was right down into the very guts of the phone.
Right. So Apple has said that they're fighting it. They said they don't want to do that because it's security on the phone. And one of the reasons why people buy Apple phones is because, they're secure. And if this would ever get out, and believe me, if you give it to the government, there's a good chance it'll get out somewhere. That means anybody can start breaking into Apple phones.
Well, you know, the bottom line is if you build in a backdoor to any device, somebody somewhere, once they know it exists, they will find it and use it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they're also concerned because the U.S. isn't the only country that they sell Apple phones in. So if they turn around and do this for the U.S. government, the next thing you know, China or some small despot could require the same thing. So, and this may sound funny because, you know, knowing my background and stuff, and usually I'm one of these people who's like, hey, if the federal government wants to sit there and try and listen in on your phone calls, it's like walking down Main Street. You know what I have always said? It's like walking down Main Street. It's your responsibility. If you want to be private, be private. Okay? With this, I'm on Apple's side because I'm saying, yes, these people did bad things. Okay, I'm bad at explaining this, so I'll try to get what I think out. But yes, these people did bad things. But just like I compare it kind of like, I compare it a little bit with the First Amendment and the Second Amendment. And let me explain that. I compare it to the Second Amendment.
I kind of like the First Amendment part, but I don't quite catch the second.
Okay, I'll tell you why. Because the Second Amendment says we are allowed to have weapons and nobody should make laws against that. Okay?
Right.
Now, because does that
we
mean
we have to face an unjust government that has to be overthrown?
And that's another thing. Now, does that mean bad people may get weapons because of the Second Amendment and do bad things with it? Yes. Does that mean we should take away everybody's rights just because of a few bad people? So, if you unlock the phone because these are really bad people, in the future, could they ask you to unlock the phone for not so bad people?
Yeah.
So it's the good with the bad. And the First Amendment, I say that because with the First Amendment, this is the law. And everybody's free to speak. And if you truly believe in the First Amendment, even if somebody says something that you totally disagree with, that you think is totally horrible, that this person is pure evil, you still let them speak because it is their right to speak according to the First Amendment.
Yeah, and that's true. So, I mean, that's why a lot of hate mongers and, you know, a lot of hate radio people are very popular these days.
Right. But I'm just saying, with this, that's the way I feel. You may not like that Apple's refusing to do this because these people did very bad things, and there's potential data on there, but think of the consequences if Apple gives in. It could happen to not-so-bad people. It could happen to a freedom fighter group, you know, or something, you know.
Exactly. Well, I get where you're going,
you know. I don't know whether I'm explaining it right or not, but it's like, as a person, I take it.
It sounds like you're going all the way around the forest when what you really want to do is get to the middle of the woods and say, you know, speech should be protected. Privacy should be protected.
And
what
that's
I say
it.
On my own personal device to my friends and my relatives. The government has no right knowing.
And the way I feel about this with the iPhone is, again, I say going out in the public is like walking down Main Street, okay? And it's up to you to be, you have the right to be private. And it's up to you to be private. That means you select the things that will help you stay private. The iPhone, because of its security and encryption, is one of those ways that you can stay a little bit more private if you want to. So if suddenly the government can come in and say, oh, well, guess what? Yeah, that tool you used that you thought was safe and private, yeah, it's not going to be because we're going to force them to open that up.
Well, the way I look at it in a totally different perspective is, okay, the government is leaning on Apple to do this because the guy happened to have an Apple device. But what if he had had a Samsung S5?
Mm-hmm.
That's owned by Samsung, sold by Samsung, a foreign company, built in an overseas company.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to tell Samsung? Oh, Samsung, if you want to keep selling stuff in this country, you got to give us a back door to your phones. And like Samsung's going to like give him a big middle finger saying, hey, I'm not in your country. You can't tell me squat, you know?
Yeah.
So why are they picking on Apple? You know?
Because they can.
Yeah, bullshit. Yeah, that's the way I call it. That's a great big bullshit factor to me. Yeah. Because before they pull anything on Apple, they ought to make a unilateral law against all cell phone providers and marketers that cell phones should have to be open to the government. And if they can't pass that, then they can't go picking on Apple. Because to me, that's picking on just one simple company because one guy happened to have their product. So if you can't make a broad-based law covering all products, then shut the hell up. And they can't do that. So they ought to just shut the hell up, period.
And if I were Apple right now, because of this and because there kind of is a way that they could break in and refuse to do it, if I were Apple right now, I'd be rethinking my design for some kind of foolproof way of not being able to break in. So the next time this happens, they can look at the government and say,
the 5C, I think, is the last phone that they actually can do that to.
Mm.
So I think the 6s, they have no way of actually providing that.
Yeah. I know there was that bricking thing that people were getting the error 53 because something went wrong with their thumb device or whatever, and so they went to a third party place to get work done, and the thumb device was disconnected somehow or something, it would brick the phone, and that's because an Apple said, well, that was kind of done on purpose because all your information is on the phone. It's encrypted on the phone, and we don't want anybody to be able to bypass that to get into your encrypted information. And so that was kind of done on purpose. Now that supposedly they put a fix out for it because there's too many people made a big deal about it. But, you know, I'm like, well, thank you, Apple, because I know I've got a bunch of credit card information in there. It's encrypted and it only exists on my phone. It's not out in the cloud somewhere. It's not anywhere else. So if somebody steals my phone, I want to be able to blank that thing out or at least have it encrypted so they can't get to that information.
Yeah, well, that's what one good thing about Apple phones. If you leave your phone somewhere, you can go online to find my phone and you can brick it remotely. Or you can make it beep or, you know, a number of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, an interesting postscript to this whole discussion that the public reaction has been overwhelmingly in Apple's favor. People have been posting post-it notes in the front of Apple stores saying, thank you, Apple, protect our privacy.
Yeah.
And things like, you know, to that effect. So the whole public is like behind Apple saying, yeah, protect us, protect our privacy, you know?
Yeah.
And like, this is going to end up being a really big boon for Apple because it's like, you know, it's like Apple against the government saying, well, you know, we're selling to the people, and the people are saying, protect us, and we're going to protect the people. So,
well I got to tell you, you know, my big spiel in the past couple podcasts about really seriously looking at the Samsung phone versus the iPhone, you know, Samsung Galaxy 7 versus the iPhone 7 when it comes out, and actually make a decision. This kind of has put me back in the favor of Apple right now, because
I agree.
You know, makes me say, maybe I will put up with that frickin' adapter I'm going to have to get to use regular earbuds.
Well, you might want to wait to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, well, I am.
If the government forces Apple to put a back door on their phones, everybody might stop buying Apple phones and, you know, buy Samsung, because the U.S. government cannot tell a Korean company what to do.
Oh, I think they might
be
bar
very... bar sales of their phones.
They have a party. Samsung uses Android. It's all open anyway.
Yeah, well, it's all owned by Google.
No, I don't know. I tell you the truth, I don't know how secure a Samsung phone is. I know they've got Samsung Pay, which is different than Android Pay, on it, and it does a pretty cool thing. I mean, the Samsung Pay thing actually works. You know, you've seen the commercials, right?
Yeah.
Where the guy buys his sandwich with it.
Sandwich of cats.
Yeah, and then the guy behind them does the same thing. Oh! the way I look at Android is if you buy a Google Android device,
yeah,
good for you. They're awesome. They're great.
Yeah.
If you buy somebody else's Android device, well, your results are going to vary. Your mileage may vary, and, you know, good luck to you.
My big thing is still... and this is another thing. I know it comes down. It really comes down to the apps, okay? And I've got my that thing, you know.
The Google Nexus 7.
Yeah, Nexus 7. That's it. Hang on.
I have one too, and I love it. Hang on.
Drink up, Shriners. Okay, now I've killed off a few more brain cells, so I can't remember things. I've got some identical apps on the Nexus 7 and on my iPhone 6 Plus. Okay, one of them is my podcasting listening. And I Pocket Cast and. On the iPhone, the thing's great. I've got this variable speed button that works great. So, because you know, I like to listen to my podcast fast, makes everybody sound a lot more intelligent.
I like the chipmunks.
And it works with videos too. Well, I only go up 1.5. I don't listen 2x speed. I do 1.5 speed. But I'll tell you, I put it down to 1 and listen to people's podcasts. I said, damn, you guys sound a lot dumber when I listen to it at normal speed. Anyway.
So we should recommend people listen to our show faster.
Oh, yeah. Yes. at least 1.5 times. Yeah.
Although this show has been very educational.
If you listen to us at 1.5 times speed, we will sound normal.
I like Joel's reaction.
Anyway, but the same. Anyway, so you got this thing, and it works on videos too. I can watch my and listen to my video podcast at 1.5 speed. Well, I was exercising my Nexus 7 the other night, and I brought up the Pocket Cast, and I was watching videos, and I said, "Oh, it's 1 speed. Let me bump." It up to 1.5, and I'm looking, and there's no speed adjustment button there. You can't do it on the Nexus 7.
Huh.
You can do it on the Apple phone.
Well,
Android, you can't do it there. Another
that's
one.
That's just one app.
Well, not there's many apps like that. So, there's QST. I get QST being an amateur radio person.
Yeah.
And the QST app on the iPad and the iPhone is very smooth, very nice. And it's a thing of beauty. The exact same app on the Nexus 7, and that's so good. Very choppy. Very kind of like just looking at a PDF file. You know?
Yeah, well, I've compared my Nexus 7 to my Galaxy S5.
Yeah.
And, you know, setting the screen size differences aside, obviously, I find that the pure Google Android experience makes Samsung look like a stepchild. All the same apps work the same way, but for some reason, on the Nexus 7, they're snappier and more responsive, whereas on the Samsung, it's sluggish and things like that. And I'm, you know, my Nexus 7 isn't like the latest, greatest one. My Samsung S5 is a newer device than my S7 is. But I tell you this, the the Google device just does Android right. Well, and the Samsung just kind of does it as an approximation.
Well, I got to tell you, Barty, my experience with Android is on the Nexus 7, so it is the pure experience.
That's why I'm saying, I'm comparing Android
to Android.
I'm comparing Android on a native Google device and on a Samsung device that's newer than my Google device, and I'm saying that the Google device, even older, does better.
Yeah.
Of course, I do have a newer version of Android in the Google device because Google updates their stuff for their devices faster.
And that's the thing. I've got Nexus 7, and I've got Marshmallow on it. So I've got the latest and greatest. And I'm telling you, even the Twitter apps, not as nice on the Android. And the FaceTube, not as nice. You know, the only thing I got to give to the Android one is the is that Michael?
Yes, it is.
Hey
Michael!
And there's his. Even though he joined, it still comes up and rings. But I've learned to ignore it, and that makes me very really happy. So, yeah, I gotta say that. Android and apps on the Android. Oh, the ones that are good is obviously Google Maps is great. I think it actually runs a little better on the iPhone.
My experience is that it does run better on the iPhone.
Yeah, I like OK Google. OK Google is great, fast, snappy compared to Siri. Yeah. That is excellent, and it works great. Great. Matter of fact, sometimes my Nexus 7's over there and sitting there, and I don't know whether it hears something or whatever, but all of a sudden it starts speaking up. I didn't quite hear you. What did you say? I'm like, I didn't say anything.
I've never really played with that.
Yeah.
I don't really use Siri that much, except when I'm in the car and I'm trying to make a phone call, which is a really weird thing, because I have my iPhone Bluetoothed into my Jeep, and I can push the phone button and tell it I want to call my wife at home, and it calls her. I can call my wife on her iPhone, and it calls her, but I cannot call my wife on my iPhone to her iPhone. What the hell?
No. You better check the Bluetooth in your car.
Sometimes it's at different settings. No, it works in the car.
Oh, it works in the car. I'm sorry.
Okay. I can, and it's going through my iPhone. I can call her through the Bluetooth in my car. But if we were both in a mall together, and I try to call her, I can't reach her.
What?
And like, for grins, because today we were down picking up podcasting supplies and miscellaneous other great things, and I had left my car key in my jacket, which I left in the Jeep, and I wanted to let my sweet bride please unlock the Jeep, and couldn't call her. So I said, well, wait a minute. If I can call her through Bluetooth in the Jeep, it goes through Siri. Let me try Siri. Nah, by hand on my phone, I cannot call my wife with Siri.
You know what I've noticed on my phone lately? And this happened to me 3 times this week. Because of situations where I gave people my cell phone number to call me, I never received any of the calls. My phone did not ring. The first time I ever knew that somebody had tried to call me was I got a voicemail from them.
That happens.
It's happening to me all the time now, though.
But that's a carrier issue normally. It's not the phone. What will happen is the tower will saturate, and it can't take any more calls. Even though you're in coverage, you've got data, but if the tower is at its maximum number of calls, it's going to go right to voicemail. You never ring. You never hear it.
That's
an infrastructure problem.
Okay.
When I look at my wife's phone, she doesn't even show that she was even hit with a call.
Huh. Yeah, you might want to contact Apple on that.
Yeah, because it's only her phone. I mean, she can call me, but I can't call her. It just goes and rings and rings and rings and then gives me some message that voicemail hasn't been set up on this phone yet.
Yeah. Are you sure you haven't been blocked?
By my own wife?
I can see that happening.
Not intentionally, but it's possible.
No, I think intentionally.
Yeah, she's had enough of my shit. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, you might want to check that. That could be. You could be accidentally blocked or something.
Yeah, I was looking. I did think about that. I did look at it, but I'm not really sure how to totally tell who's blocked on her phone and who isn't.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's. I'm going to go on to the next topic. But before that, Michael, welcome into the show. Are you in the family truckster?
Yes, I'm in the family truckster in Iron Mountain, Michigan. Mark finished his tournament. We grabbed something to eat, and now we're heading north.
Yeah. And
what was the result of the tournament? How did Mark do?
It's a team tournament, and the team placed third in the group. They did very well, especially for a relatively new program from a small school. So we're very proud of them.
Very Woo! Good.
All right.
Nice. Plight clap.
Yes, plight clap.
Way to go. Pass on our congratulations to him.
We'll do that. Yeah, I got your invite to join from the tournament there, Barry, and I appreciated that. I know the Foley noises would have been great, but I really wanted to concentrate on watching them bowl. Okay. So.
That's what Joel was saying. Well, you know, maybe he wants to talk to his family and pay attention. And I said,
"So Barry, take back all the nasty things you said about
some kind of podcaster I am, right?"
I said, "What? Family over this podcast? Come on."
That's pretty much what he said, but he was laughing when he said it, though. I will defend him and say that.
Anyway, so we're down in Geek's Corner right now. So, and going on to the, I got to say, last fall, Scott, one of our listeners and also a fellow podcaster.
What's his podcast?
It's the Uncommon Sense or Uncommon Sense.
Oh, right. All right. Yeah.
Okay.
I know that was his name. I've listened to that podcast.
Well, you'll see him. He is his Nimbus.
Oh, that's Nimbus, all right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know who he is. All right.
Okay.
I got that guy.
That's Scott. And he said, he sent an email last fall. He goes, "Hey, at an amateur radio place, I picked up this TV antenna. I don't need it. I got it for $25. I'll sell it to you what I paid for it." And I said, "I'll take it." And of course, it took me a while to get over there to get it. And but I got it, and it's been sitting in my garage because I didn't have a chance to get it up on the pole before the winter. But as I was telling you, I think before, when did I? Yeah, I told you I got Windows 10 up on my machine finally. And when I was inside of the machine and stuff, I'm looking at it, I realized that I still have, I have a built-in TV receiver. Yes. In this thing. And it's a digital. It receives digital. So I wanted to check it out and everything. So I said, "I need to connect an antenna somehow." And then I said, "Oh, I've got this antenna down in the basement. Down in the garage." So I brought it up here. And it's one of those bow tie ones. And it's supposed to be, a long-distance antenna. Yep. I look at the design of it, and I say, it's just pointing the wrong way for, you'll put it upright, and it's got, like, a collector in the back, but two bow ties on one collector, and then two more bow ties on the bottom collector. And I said, "That just doesn't seem like it's going to have a lot of, dB and pull-in channels, because, Boston is 70 miles away. I think the antennas sit at about 65 miles away. But needless to say, I plugged the thing into the back of the PC and I did a scan, and damn, if I didn't get almost all the Boston channels with the thing sitting on the floor of the studio here, propped up and kind of half pointed down toward Boston. So I said, when I get this thing up on a pole and up in the air in a little bit, This is all looking well into my plans on cutting the satellite cable potentially. So, and that leads into my next topic, which I said, okay, well, if I do cut the cord, I got to be able to get the TV signal around to we have two TVs. We got one up in the bedroom and, you know, of course, the one in the family room. And as far as Plex is concerned, as far as Roku is concerned, and all that stuff, Netflix, that hits both TVs because we now are a two Roku family, Roku 3 family. And you can get Plex anywhere on the network. So I said, I want to start looking for one of these tuners that you can get that basically brings in the live signal, converts it, and pushes it out on your network. And I came across, and I'm actually asking people, because I haven't purchased this yet, but I'm really looking at this Tablo. It's a device called Tablo. It was a Kickstarter program at one time. They've since gone off of that, and they're actually producing it. It's actually a Canadian company, too. It gets great reviews online. It comes in, what it is, it's a box, and it's got... You can, there's two different models. There's one with two tuners in it and one with four tuners in it. So it takes your signal in, it converts the signal, and then it only has one output, and that's, to your network. It's got built-in Wi-Fi, so it can send it across Wi-Fi, or you can send it, you know, you can cable it in to your network if you want. There is no HDMI input, so I said, that's okay, because I wanted to sit up here in the studio and just connect into the network. And then they've got applications on... Plex has a channel that tunes into it. And I think they've got one for Apple TV. No, Roku, I mean. Roku's got a application. Apple TV's got one. They've got apps for both Android and iPhone and the tablets. They've got an application for the PCs and Macs. And I said, you know, this may be the way to go with this thing. Now, it will also act as a DVR. You have to supply the hard drive, though. But they have two USB ports on the back, and you can just go get an external, like a 2 terabyte external hard drive, plug it into the back, and then it can act like a DVR, and you can program it and tell it to, you know, record series and things like that. And I'm getting close to once I get the antenna up, and I realize, you know, and I can get all the TV channels that I want. I'm thinking this may be the way to go to get it on there. But if anybody else has any experience with the Tablo, let me know. Let me know what you think about it. Go up on our Google Plus community there and leave a comment. So
I never, obviously never messed with it. Oh, Michael, go ahead.
Actually, I wasn't going to say anything, but can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. We heard the truck coming.
I was just unmuting my mic because of the background noise from the truck and everything. But I guess what I will say is, I won't be one reviewing it because, like the fact that I have no cell phone reception in the harbor, we've got no TV reception either. There are no signals. None. Zip.
What do you watch on TV? Is yours strictly all from the internet?
Mostly we watch Netflix, but we do have DirecTV satellite.
Oh, that's right. You have the satellite. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you should have DirecTV or Dish, right?
We can have both, but yeah, we use DirecTV.
Okay.
At least so far. But yeah, we're watching mostly Netflix. I mean, just about everything I watch is online these days.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm getting so sick of the price going up on the satellite service. And, of course, we switched over to Dish, and they're very honest about it. They say, look, your deal's up and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I'm up to $120 a month again on Dish. And I'm like, I don't want to be there. I want to be, like, $40 a month. Yeah.
Well, especially since, you know, you're paying all this money for these large number of channels that most of which you barely ever watch.
Exactly.
You know, why can't you just simply pay for what you consume?
Yeah. Because my wife and I sat down and said, look, what do we watch on the dish? You know, I said, most of the time we're watching the major networks, you know, the local channels. I said, okay, I can get them off the air. Movies, we don't even do pay-per-view and stuff like that anymore. Pretty well. Yeah, sometimes we do pay-per-view. But you can get any movie you want on either pay-per-view, Apple TV, Roku has their channel. The Amazon Magic Prime. Antenna works great. And TV shows, same thing. I mean, if you're really interested in a series, and Joel used to do this before, you know, he joined the Fuck You Network. All the TV if you want to pay for it, you go on Apple and pretty much get every series. You can buy them by the series if you want. Again, the Magic Antenna works great. But everything that we watch, I hardly ever watch the satellite anymore. I watch the satellite for local news because I don't have an antenna up on the roof. Pretty much what I'm watching.
I had
it for.
On the roof, but it really couldn't pick up the channels. Yeah. I don't know why they put it there because it never really got anything. So when we put a new roof on and asked, "Do you want the antenna up there?" I said, "Oh no, hell no, get rid of that."
Yeah.
Because we never got anything out of it anyway, and we're so heavy into high def that standard def is it's not worth bothering with.
Yeah.
Even if it's free, it's not worth bothering with. But, you were talking about that Tableau thing. Mm-hmm. You know what? It sounds like a more advanced version of back Windows 3. I think it was 3. It was before Windows 95 came out.
Mm-hmm.
You could buy this attachment unit that you could attach to a cable box, a satellite box, or whatever, mm-hmm. and tie it all. You got an add-in card that plugged into your PC.
Yeah.
That you plugged all this crap into, and you run all these wires to your satellite box. Of course, this is back in the day when you only had one TV in the living room, right?
Yeah.
Hang on, I got a cough.
Okay. Please, go ahead. Oh, he's using a cough button.
Woo! No, I used the mute button.
Oh. That's a cough button.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's what a cough button does. It mutes your sound.
Well, I usually use it to mute when my wife wants to.
Unless you're Jason, then it creates a cough.
So anyway, we had this whole big thing, and I wish I remember what it was called, but Windows had this whole cool package that would go through your entire satellite or cable system and record all the shows for you onto your PC.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is all way back in the standard def days.
Yeah.
There was no high def or anything.
Right.
But it was like before DVRs and stuff. And I went and bought into that thing, and it was one of the coolest things. It made, because this is back before I became a Mac person. And it was like, oh, wow, this is a great reason to own Windows.
Yeah.
And then high def came out, and it was incompatible, and all of a sudden it was, like, totally useless. And it was like, well, okay, so much for Windows.
The other thing with Windows was, and this is later versions of Windows, they had Windows Media Player, which was an extremely very well put together application that allowed you to act like a DVR, pull this stuff in show it. But
this was even beyond Media's window player, Media Player, because it was like a whole integrated thing.
Oh, yeah.
It would like latch on to your cable box or your satellite box. And it had you had these little tiny wires that would go out, and you could put them, you had to pull off the sticky and stick it to the front of the sensor on your box. And your computer would control your satellite or cable box.
Hmm.
And it would change the channels, no matter where you were, you were gone. And it would, control all this stuff before there were DVRs around.
Wow.
And it would, record all this stuff. And it would even do some in the background.
Hmm.
And it was like, how the hell was it doing this stuff?
Wow. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was.
Ahead of its time.
Yeah, yeah, and then TiVo came out and made it look like a joke.
Yeah, the thing with TiVo, TiVo's out there, and it kind of does the same thing this Tableau thing does, but TiVo has this ridiculous, I forget how much the fee is each a monthly fee to use it. Plus, their device is pretty expensive, too. And because I was looking at that, too, and the Tableau was a lot less expensive. And there is a monthly fee to get the guide information, which if you want to use it as a DVR, you kind of need the guide information. So it can go ahead and set up, you know, recording times and stuff that. But it was only like $4 a month or something for the guide information.
Now, this Microsoft thing was like a one-time thing. You had to pay for it and get the add-in card and, you know, various adapters. And it came with everything you needed. And it came with like different, you know, multiple cables to connect up to all the standard, the major cable boxes of the day. Mm-hmm. And satellite boxes of the day, which I think back in those days was only DirecTV.
Yeah.
But because that was before Dish.
Yeah.
But it was like, where are you? It had like a little see through thing. So even when you weren't using computer, your remote would still work. And you had to put this little like circle thing right over the sensor that the remote would talk to, you know? And they had told you to make sure that the wire was pointed away. And things like that. It was like really cool.
Let me guess. Microsoft did away with it.
Well, yeah. When high def came out, the whole thing became obsolete. It was like it was like one of those add-ons onto Windows 3 for networks.
Wow, that's old.
It was. It was like at when cable TV only had like 12, 15 channels, you know. Well, yeah.
The cable TV really was just a big aerial antenna up on a large tower.
With an aerial antenna, you've got like three or four channels. With cable, you got 15 or 16 channels.
Yeah.
And then you could add on like HBO and junk on top.
Oh, HBO, back when it was known as Home Box Office.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It only had one channel then.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Weather Channel was a camera on a pivoting tripod that ran across a series of weather instruments with a card at the end that gave you the forecast.
Exactly. Yeah, and you would watch that thing for hours, waiting for the changes.
Yeah, and the other end was be an advertising card. Back in the old days. Okay, well, Barty, tell us about your new printer.
Well, this is only a preview because I only picked it up today, and it's funny as hell because
Buy new ink, get a new printer. Let's see, well, getting a new printer is actually cheaper.
Well, it's exactly what I ran into because my sweet bride wanted to go shopping, and she wanted to go to this particular store, and I said, oh, there's a Best Buy nearby. I'll go with you. I need new ink because I've got this Epson. A photo printer, and I thought, well, you know, I'm running low on ink. I can't print pictures anymore, so I'll go there and I'll buy new ink. Well, guess what? They don't sell ink for my Epson anymore.
Oh.
And looking at other Best Buys, a lot of other Best Buys don't either. But my Epson Photo Pro printer is gotten a little long in the tooth. So I looked at some other machines that they had there, and, you know, I'm like, ah, geez, what can I do? Because, you know, my printer right now won't even print a black and white print. It won't even do a single, like, page of text because I'm low on light cyan. I don't use light cyan to print a black text page, but the printer won't do it because it doesn't have enough light cyan. So, well, fuck you, printer. But anyway, I go to the store and looking through, and like, you can't buy a photo printer anymore at a computer store.
Mm-mm.
Or electronic store, because obviously there aren't computer stores anymore. But and I was like looking, all they have are like all these all-in-one things. And well, I don't want an all-in-one. All I want is a printer I can print pictures with, photographs. That's what I want to do. I want to print photographs. And occasionally text. And they're like, well, we don't sell those. Well, what the hell? So they said, we do have some of these multiple things that do print on photographic paper. And so I looked around at them and stuff, and, you know, I'm thinking, well, you know, as old as my Epson is and my Canon, I got two different photographic quality printers that I use. And they are each getting long enough in the tooth that each of their inks are getting hard to get a hold of. So I look around and I said, well, what's the best photo quality printer you have? And he looks around and he says, well, I guess this HP is probably the very best. And I look at it and like, it's like really cheap. It's like 100 and a half. I says, why is this so cheap? I said, because, you know, the last time I bought a photo quality printer, it cost me like $350, $400. And he's like, well, he's like a 20-year-old kid, so he has like no idea what the fuck I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I ask him why it's so cheap, he's, well, I don't know, that's just what the price is. So, you know, so I look at the one next to it that's $200 more, and I says, well, why is this one more? Is this better? He goes, no, that's a year older. This one's newer, so it's on sale. And I said, are you kidding me? And he says, no. So, of course, I says, well, okay, I'll take this one because I can at least print with this freaking thing. So, you know, that's all I want to do. I want to print some freaking pictures. So he says, yeah, it'll print on photo paper with no problem. And we can give you some HP paper. It'll print on any paper. But, you know, I says, well, okay, this is an HP printer. I want HP paper. So he goes on the back and he comes back like a freaking 20 minutes later and says, oh, we don't have this printer. What are you talking about? You just stole me on this damn thing and you don't have it? So, you know, I'm being politer to him than that, but, mm-hmm. you know, it makes it more fun to say it like this.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he says, well, I've got last year's model. And I'm like, but you already told me it's $200 more. He says, well, I can probably price match that for you. And I says, well, what's the difference? I mean, why would I want to get last year's model? Wouldn't I want to get the better one? And he says, well, the only thing they changed this year was cosmetic changes, and they gave you a bigger, brighter LCD screen. But all the printing capabilities are the same. I says, really? And he says, well, let me double check that. So he goes off. He comes back about 20 minutes later, and he says, yes, I verified. The printing qualities are exactly the same. All that's changed is that the newer one is prettier and has a better, brighter LCD screen. And I don't give a shit about the fucking shit. I want to print fucking pictures. That's all I want. Yeah. So then he says, okay. And I said, but this one, if I buy this one, it's like $50 more. He says, well, I can price match that for you. So I said, you really can? He goes, yeah. So he goes over and he types it all up and he goes, oh, I need a supervisor. So 20 minutes later, a supervisor came by and wants to know why I'm not buying the newer one. And I looked at her and I says, because you don't have the new one. And she looks at him and he says, yeah, we don't have the new one. She goes, oh, my God. And she just puts on her coat, her okay coat. And I'm like, oh, my God.
And that's why Amazon is doing such a business.
I know. Oh, this gets better, Barry. Ed, trust me, this gets better. So I go, okay, fine. I buy this. I buy the HP paper for it, the semi-gloss that I want to print some fucking pictures on. And I take off. I go home. And, you know, we do all this funny stuff. And we get settled in the house. I set up the printer. Oh, it works awesome, right? I set it up. You have a little LCD screen. I put in the old wireless info so it connects to my gateway. And it connects and goes, it's all happy and says, oh, I can connect to the internet. Would you like me to update myself? I go, what the hell? Go ahead. So it does that. And, you know, it takes no time at all. I go over to my Mac. My Mac, I hit the plus sign on the printer. I go, oh, you have a new printer. Would you like me to download software? Oh, fuck yeah, go ahead. So it downloads the software and it's all happy. Everything's happy, right? So the big problem is when I go to set this machine up, I pull all the plastic off of it and all the miscellaneous 2,000 stickers of tape and all that kind of crap. And I get it all set up and stuff and realize they never packed a power cord.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I can't plug this damn thing in. So I go looking around at the hole. I'm a guy. I look at holes, right? So I look at the hole, and I figure, oh, I got something that'll fit in that hole. So, you know, I find something that'll fit in that hole, and I plug it in. So, you know, it all powers up, and everything's good. So, you know, everything's fine. Everything's happy. I call Best Buy and say, hey, you know, the exact store I bought it from, I told them, you know, and they said, oh, yeah, yeah, remember you buying that? Yeah, yeah. Well, it doesn't have a power cord. Oh, you got to bring it back. What do you mean I got to bring it back? I said, the friggin' thing works. I found another cord that doesn't quite fit well enough, but it fits, and I powered it up, and I'm using it. It works fine. All I want is a power cord. I says, well, we can't just simply pull a power cord out of another box and give it to you. And I'm like, well, yes, what's going to happen when I bring this back? You're going to give me another box, and what if that doesn't have a power cord? I says, well, you got to bring that one back, too. I'm like, really? And yeah, you know. You know me, I live in a rural area. Going to a Best Buy store is a long drive.
Yeah.
And in this case, we were actually going further away because we wanted to visit other particular stores.
Yeah.
We wanted to go to a Hobby Lobby, one of the biggest ones in the area. Uh-huh. So, I figured, okay, while we're going down there, we'll hit these other places. You know, because we never do a single day the destination trip.
Right.
You know, you never do a trip that goes to only one place. You pick a number of places you want to hit and go there on the one day. So anyway, we go there and, you know, we buy the purchase. We come back and I tell the guy, no, this is unacceptable. And he says, well, you could probably bring it by to a Best Buy near closer to you. Well, that's about maybe 10, 15 miles closer. He says, well, that's about all we can do is you can return it and we'll give you a new one. And so I told him, if I return it, you're not giving me anything.
Exactly. Amazon's a great place to buy things.
And that's what I told him. I says, you know, if I bought this from Amazon and I called Amazon back and said, hey, look, this thing arrived today without a power cord, I would have a power cord here in 2 days.
Oh, you'd probably get another printer and they'd tell you to keep the other one.
So, well, I didn't go right to that. I just simply said that if I called Amazon and told them I was upset because I didn't get a power cord, I would have a power cord within 2 days.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we can't do that. But if you can bring it back to us, we can give you a new one.
Yeah.
And, but how do I know there's a power cord in it? And he goes, well, you could open it. Like, I want to sit there and open the freaking thing and take it all apart in a freaking store? Really? Really? That's your solution? So I told the guy, well, what if I call HP? He says, well, they might give you another power cord because they don't want you to return the unit.
Yeah.
So I went, oh, God, you suck. So that's basically what I did. I did go online to HP and say, hey, I bought a brand new printer from Best Buy in DeWitt, New York, and they said they could not give me a replacement power cord unless I returned the unit back to them. And I said, do you want me to return the unit back to them, or can you send me a power cord? Guess what? I'm getting a power cord.
Very good.
So, and I mentioned the exact store location, the exact store number, and said, what do you want me to do? You want me to return this to them? And the guy came back. I was doing this on an online chat. Oh, no, 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 sir. You keep this printer. You have it working, and it's working satisfactory for you. We will send you a brand new cord as a warranty replacement. No problem. The only problem is I got to wait until, like, maybe the 2nd of March for it to get here.
Well, you can still use it with the plug you got in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's a temporary fix, so... Well, that's cool. No. I mean, at least it's working out, and so, lessons learned. Another lesson learned. Contact the manufacturer.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I tell them you're going to return this because that's what the store said to do.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they're going to be like, well, what can we do to keep you from returning this?
Yeah.
So, but in the meantime, the printer is a really cool printer. When I clicked on the plus button in my system preferences to add a new printer,
mm-hmm.
It automatically found the printer because I had already added it to my wireless router, mm-hmm. my Apple Extreme router. And it said, oh, I can download that software for you. Would you like me to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. Obviously I don't have the FU network, so it took a while. But, you know, I went and had dinner and stuff. And by the time I was done with dinner, it was all done and I was fully operational with, you know, with the new machine, and it prints really well.
Hmm. Very good. Yeah, I've got an older version of that same all-in-one printer, and we've been very happy with it. Matter of fact, last week we went out to Staples to, and the nice thing about those, I don't know whether yours has this or not, but you have the ink cartridges with the printer heads, and then they've got reservoirs with other ink. And the nice thing about that is you can buy these reservoirs separate. You don't have to buy a new printer head every time you run out of ink. You can get these reservoir ones. Now, they're still expensive, but they come with more ink in them than when you buy the printer head ones.
Barry, you need to look into the latest HP technology, because what they have now with this model is you can match your cartridge replacement automatically online.
I heard that. The people, we went to Staples to get ink, and they said the latest ones do that, and they automatically send them to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally. Right now, we signed up, and I think this is probably an overly aggressive plan for us, but when I told my wife that once I get this configured, she can print things from her iPad or iPhone, she got giddily excited. So I'm not going to downsize until I see what she does with it, because this is AirPrint compatible. So, you know, any iDevice can talk to it. I haven't achieved that yet, but I have been able to print to it from my my Mac Pro just by connecting to it and doing things. You know, the
crap. We don't even have ours connected to a computer. It just sits by itself.
And yeah, that's what this does.
Yeah.
It connects to my Apple Extreme router.
Yeah.
And just
we don't even have it connected to that. We just use the Wi-Fi connection on it.
Oh, I use the web interface to go in and configure it on my on my Mac Pro. I webbed into the printer and configured it and stuff. But I haven't really been able to figure out how to quite make it talk to my iDevices yet.
It's easy. Mine found them and it worked right away. You just got to go in and, you know, set them up. That's all. So.
Okay. Well, I haven't gotten that far yet.
Yeah.
But I did. It's 10 o'clock. Are you guys still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Michael muted, or he lost signal.
All right. So, where was I going with? Oh, as far as the print thing, what you can do now is you can sign up for like $5 a month for a 100 pages of print a month. It doesn't care if it's, well, you know, what paper it is, if it's a photo or just plain paper or whatever. So that's what we signed up to. It's $5 a month for 100 prints a month, you know, 100 printed pages. We started with that. And of course, you know, because we bought a new printer and signed up for it automatically, we get the first month free. So we can kick it around. You can change it anytime you want. You can change it down to less if you're not printing as much.
Yeah.
You know, because you know how it goes. There are some seasons that you don't really want to print a lot of stuff. But there are other seasons, you know, when you get into like fall and Christmas and things where you want to like pump out a lot of pictures and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you can adjust it monthly, up and down. You have a web interface where you can go in. Excuse me. I'm trying to trying to cut in and out between coughs.
Yeah, that's good.
God damn, I missed that one. But like I told you on the pre-show, Barry, I've been very sick.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, it's really kind of cool because when you run out of ink, HP will send you a new cartridge in the mail automatically.
Nice.
And, you know, the problem that Tony and I have is that we start printing a lot of papers and we start printing a lot of pictures, and a lot of it is seasonal. And we use up a lot of ink in a short time, and then, You know, and it sits around there. And it dries,
yeah.
You know? And then you go to do some more, and then the cartridges are too dry, and you got to replace them all. And it's like one by one by one. And it's like our printers are like photo printers, but they're so old that less and less outlets are selling the ink for them.
Yeah.
So that's the problem we ran into. I mean, all that Best Buy in DeWitt, New York sold was just black ink for our printer. And of course, the last thing I needed was black. I needed light cyan and
the colors.
Yeah,
all the colors. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and the black costs more too.
Actually, the black is cheaper. The color,
really?
The other, well, because I have like I have photo colors.
Oh, okay.
It's a photo printer.
Oh, so you get special ink.
Yeah, the ink. Yeah. The inks are all designed to print on photographic paper. Yeah. It's not a text printer. It is strictly a photographic printer.
Hmm.
And, you know, like text is like an extra for this thing. Yeah. And it doesn't do text very well.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, that's not what it's designed for.
Right.
It's designed for photographs. And that's what I use it for. And the guy was saying, you know, of course, he doesn't know. But I was thinking that for a lot of our photographic use, I need to replace my printer anyway. So if I can get a decent average photograph printer, you know, I can make do with that.
Hmm.
You know, for a lot of our photographic work,
because
most of our photographic work we don't print because we're looking at things that are much higher res than what you can get out of a printer.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So it's kind of like printing has become secondary. Where you know, back when I first started printing pictures, it was like almost the same quality that you could get out of a common developer.
Yeah.
You know, because it was like, you know, comparing film and things.
Right, right. Now with all the high resolution stuff, it's better to look at it on my computer screen.
Yeah. You know, when I look at a standard def picture on a 4K screen on my Mac Pro, it's like, this is kind of a shitty picture.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And when you look at it printed, it doesn't really look so bad. But when you look at it on a 4K screen, it's like, man, this fucking thing is ugly.
All right, so we move on?
Yeah.
Ingress?
Acquiring position. Downloading latest Intel package.
Anybody?
Nope.
Anybody?
Michael?
Michael, are you there?
I'm here. I just figured you didn't need to hear all the background noise in the truck. And then all of a sudden we realized, I'm sorry, got to get the mic in position.
No,
Olson, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. We realized we were about to drive out of the nearest area that still was open for diesel. And it was going to be a long... Well, we would have made it town, but we'd been in the high-priced diesel area, so we wanted to get it while it was low-priced. Anyhow, but that's not what you want to talk about. Ingress.
But it's good to know.
It was entertaining. After I did a shout-out for Bob, by the way, hi to everybody in Toronto.
Yes.
Dr. Dave asked Bob if they did an Ingress segment on the segment about actually podcasting, and I think Bob said something to the effect of hell no. But
before you continue, I just got to say for all you people at the Toronto podcasting camp, I just want to say podcasting.
I wish I was there. I really appreciate, by the way, Scarborough Dude is back, and you know, from his travels down under, and he contacted me as soon as I got back, or as soon as he got back, and asked, you know, if I wanted to bunk out at his place again this year, which I appreciated, but told him that wasn't going to work out. Otherwise, for Ingress, you know, Mark is over a year now for his Guardian.
Wow.
That's impressive.
That's fantastic.
I'm up to 250 some odd days myself.
Wow.
Someday that'll end. But other than that, we're like, yeah, whatever. I was actually upset with the local resistance. I got this message saying, there are 6 different Guardians from the Enlightened. Somebody's got to go take them out. And I went, what? Excuse me?
Yeah, really.
Because they wanted me to do it, and I said, F no.
No.
Yeah.
I don't want them taking out my guardians.
I don't take out people's guardians if I know it's a guardian. That's just poor sportsmanship, period.
Yeah, really.
So
they should do away with that badge.
Yeah.
So, well, I got to tell you, I've got a record. Ingress record here.
All right.
I think it's been four weeks now of absolute no play.
Are you serious?
We're going to give you the Bob badge for that.
Yeah.
I thought I was the one that had been sick last week.
No, I got to say, I still occasionally look at the map, and I'm still on the hangouts, and there's a bunch of new resistance guys that are in Keene and really giving the frogs there a run for their money now. So good for them. Polite clap.
Clap, 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 clap.
And go blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I've spent my time doing other things. So, but still a supporter of the resistance. Anybody else? Ingress?
All I've been doing at Ingress is the nearest town to me is the town of Adams, and mostly all the green and blue have been doing are wiping out each other's portals. So the whole town of Adams is totally gray right now. Nothing but white-gray portals, because as soon as one or the other takes it, everybody else pounces on them and beats the crap out of them.
Oh, and the only other thing I can say is all the new resistance players that play in Keene and the surrounding area, and they're very active players, and they have all realized the same thing us older players have realized for quite some time now, and I've heard them all kind of say this: C4's a douchebag.
That's got to be a local thing. I have no idea what that means.
C4 is one of the frogs, and he plays like a douchebag. And without any hinting from us older players or anything, they've come to the same conclusion. So, anyway, okay, let's move on then. Joel,
yes.
Get ready.
I am.
Put down the Google pages. Put down... put Craig down Smith. The whatchamacallit.
I did have I know it's a little past the fact here, but I actually did have a quick Geek Corner thing.
Oh, go ahead.
What up? Go, yes.
Got this iMessage from my wife earlier this week saying, hey, I've got the spinning beach ball of death on my computer. What do I need to do to close that out? And I said, I better come take a look at that. She goes, you really need to come back for that? And I said, well, you know, let me show you where the force quit commands are in case you forgot. And long story short, I did the force quit and nothing happened. And I did the force quit again and finally had to do the power down option. Ooh. And when I went to go power it up, I found out why I had to do the power down option.
Why?
You ever seen the folder with the question mark flashing come up when you hit the power button?
That's not good.
That means it doesn't see a hard drive anymore.
Right.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
So for the third time on this particular MacBook, now it's I'm not blaming the MacBook. It's had a very active life.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going to be its third hard drive.
Wow.
No, I'm not saying you're hard on the machine, Mrs. Virtual. I wish she, because of the amount of photo storage she has, she needs a terabyte drive.
Yeah.
Terabyte SSDs are still a little experimental. High the price. No, they're not experimental, but they're not cheap.
No.
it's about $400 for a terabyte SSD right now. And that's for the standard duty ones.
Jeez Louise. That's a lot of money.
So,
mm-hmm.
So we got another hybrid Toshiba, which actually has a 5-year warranty on it, but you know, I'm pretty sure it was movement of the machine that did it. Mm. And the hybrid terabyte drives are like $87 delivered from OWC.
Oh wow.
So wow. Yeah, you know. And with proper Time Machine, you know, it's a most an inconvenience. So it showed up in a couple of days and it's been hectic week here at the Uper household, but the new hybrid SSD is, or excuse me, I wish, the new hybrid hard drive is waiting at the house, and Monday morning I format it and hit Time Machine and it restores and we're back to where we go, which it's, you know, such so much a happier ending than it was in the Windows world.
Yeah, really. Although, but, Windows does have a file backup system now that,
yeah,
I don't know how well it is. It's kind of Time Machine-like, but you can't restore the whole computer from it. You can only restore your data files.
Yeah, I opt to use the aftermarket products out there. There's two main companies that I use for Windows. And I forgot the... Acronis is one of them. That's who I used to use, but there's actually a more commercial-based, better version now from another company, of which I have multiple licenses for that I paid for. I can't remember the name of the company.
That'll come back.
I don't use it that much. You know, we've got everything in the household is Apple, except for Mark's gaming computer.
Yeah.
And David's laptop, but David's at college, so it's not in the house right now. But I've bought licenses for hard drive backup for both of these guys, and I'm not using them, so whatever.
There you go.
Anyhow, so thanks for the diversion there.
No problem. And now
back to your regularly scheduled Joel.
Back to Bottom Gear.
That was some good information.
Don't talk over the theme. Okay?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right, stop talking over it.
Hello and welcome to another late night QRM edition of Top Gear, Bottom Gear, and
there you go. Yeah,
I love it.
I'm one of your hosts, Joel, and I am freaking exhausted. Sorry about that. But we do have a pretty good number of stories to tell. Well, at least three. So, Barry, why don't you lead us into it?
Okay. Well, I've got some Prius news, and I've
shocking
modified the beginning of what do you call it, the drop in for the Prius a little bit, to maybe you'll understand exactly what my situation was this week when I now talk about my beloved Prius. It was, of course, we talked about the very cold weather that we had last weekend.
Uh-oh.
And my Prius, although it was in the garage, was in 25-degree weather, as the outside was minus 20 degrees. I got in it and on Monday morning. Now, I had to make a stop at the hospital to get some blood drawn at the lab. At the time, it was still a healthy minus 9 degrees, when I left, pulled into the parking lot at the hospital, got everything done, got back in the Prius, started up, but I noticed on the energy, display that they have, that shows you where your energy is. It shows you the battery and how much of a charge it has. We're talking about now the hybrid battery. Yes. And mine was down to 1 bar. I said, when I went in, there were more bars than that. So I pull out and I notice that it goes up to a second bar. So I said, okay, well, it's charging, so there shouldn't be an issue. And I was saying, it is cold. And even though the battery pack is inside the car, cold will affect it. And I drove a little bit further, got out of the parking lot, and was heading down the street toward work. And all of a sudden, my dashboard lit up like a Uper Christmas tree. All sorts of things, just flashing and beeping. A big
welcome to my Jeep.
A big triangle with an exclamation point in it, and of course, I have no idea what any of this means. And I'm driving, so I'm not going to stop and pull the book out and everything. I said, "Well, it's still driving and it's charging the battery, so we'll just keep on going to work." But
that
I was
make you think they ought to put a big middle finger in the middle of that triangle, right?
Yeah, probably. But I was watching the battery charge, and it wasn't charging like I'm used to seeing. It was down to almost 2 bars, and then it would go up like 3 bars, and then all of a sudden, boom, it would go up to totally charged. And then I'd press on the gas pedal, and I'd watch the thing go down about 5 bars. And then I'd take my foot off the pedal, and boom, it would go back up to fully charged. And I said, oh, this isn't good. Well, I made it to work. I get inside my office. I immediately go to Google, and I put in the symptoms, and they said, yeah, that's the indication that your hybrid battery has finally bit the dust. And so, of course, you'll find out exactly when you take it to a dealer and they plug it into the computer and they'll tell you exactly what's wrong with it. So I called the Toyota dealership and I said, explained everything. And they said, well, we're not going to say anything yet until we plug it into the computer, you know, being safe. But so I took it down there and it had to stay overnight because, it was Washington's birthday that day. And although they were open, apparently everybody and their uncle were getting their cars done on Washington's birthday and, or presidential birthday, excuse me. So it stayed overnight and I get a call in the morning and they said, you're right. It's the hybrid battery. It's done. They said, and, the warranty on that is 100,000 miles and, 10 years or 100,000 miles. And they said, you're out of warranty. I said, I know. I said, you know, pretty much 11 years, 210,000 miles. I guess I can't complain.
No.
Yeah. Considering that other than the, Joel breaking my air conditioner.
That's right.
You know, that's the only thing that's ever gone wrong with this car. So
it's Joel.
So they I said, well, I and then, you know, meanwhile I had been reading online and I kind of knew how much it was going to cost to replace this thing and what other options are if you don't go to a Toyota dealer, which would be much cheaper, but, you know, you're talking about you are refurbished power packs and things like that. And I said, I want a new power pack. You know, if you do that, it's going to be expensive. And if it's refurbished, that means there might be old cells in there. You don't know how old, and they could go in two years' time. I don't know, you know, so I'd rather get a brand new power pack and know that it's good for another 200,000 miles, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what about the, you know, comparing that to just simply trading it in for a new one?
Okay, well, new car?
Oh, I'm sorry, that's coming.
Okay. A new car? A new car? I will explain my philosophy on new cars in a minute. But so I tell them, go ahead. But then I was reading all these nightmare stories about people saying, oh, yeah, and there was a 4-week backlog on ordering these battery packs. And I said, I can't do without my car for 4 weeks, you know?
That's nuts.
Yeah, so they call me back and they said, well, look, we don't have them here in the shop. We can get one here overnight. And so it stayed till Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it in. They called me up in the afternoon and said, it's all done. And, total damage was $3,300.
That's an ouchie.
Yeah, it's an ouchie, but the power packs now go for what I paid this at the dealer was $2,500 and some change
yeah.
for the power pack. And it's a 4-5 hour job to get the old one out and the new one in. So, so there was a chunk of labor, and if you go to a dealer, they're high on the labor's charges.
Right.
But the car was in, it was out, I drove it home. And the only thing I can say is these batteries, of course, it's been 11 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it gradually fades. You know, the batteries gradually fade. What I didn't realize until after I got a brand new battery pack in there. How much they fade. Because, you know, I got used to seeing how it gets, you know, you press on the gas pedal and how much the battery goes down, and then the battery slowly charges up again. Well, I got the brand new pack in here now, right?
Yep.
The battery doesn't move at all. It stays like 2 levels below top.
Right.
And it just stays there.
Wow.
It may go down 1 or 2, and then it takes a little longer, but you see it eventually go boom, boom. And the only place I can make it tap out at the top is going down Temple Mountain. And okay. I have always been able to tap it out going down Temple Mountain.
Right.
With that, I got to say that Toyota and their circuitry and the logic behind their software to maintain those batteries is excellent, because I didn't really see any depreciable drop in my mileage or anything, even though the batteries were starting to get weaker and weaker. They really know how to manage and maintain those batteries throughout their entire life cycle. So kudos to Toyota. And yes, it hurt. And as Barty said, many people at work said, $3,300, why don't you just buy a new car? Okay, well, first of all, that's $30,000 versus $3,300.
Right, yep.
And my other philosophy is, being at the age that I am, and being that although I have a good job, you never know, something could happen. I have a philosophy that I will always have a car that I own.
Yep.
Outright. And I will never have 2 cars that I'm making payments on, because if something, God forbid, should happen, yep, and I don't want both cars being repossessed and then I'm stuck without one.
Mm-hmm.
So, when my wife's RAV4 gets paid off, then I'll look in getting a replacement. Maybe for the Prius. I don't know if it's... I mean, Joel and I were talking about this a little bit this afternoon. Maybe I'll go out and get another Prius. Maybe I'll get a RAV4 with the... because they make a hybrid version of it. Or if the Prius is doing fine, maybe I'll keep that as a commuter car and go out and get myself a Ford F-150 or something, you know?
Yep.
So, we'll see when that time comes. But that time has not come yet. And based on the way the Prius has been treating me, I'm happy, and I'm glad I could put the new battery pack in.
Right.
So that was my...
this vision now, Barry, that when you hit the accelerator, all of a sudden this animation of the Energizer Bunny starts going back to the dashboard.
Yeah. So, and let me tell you, when they go quick.
Yep. Very little heads up.
When that light goes on, I mean, you know, granted, I said over time you could see that the batteries didn't quite keep the charge that they used to and stuff,
yeah,
but it wasn't as bad as Monday when it was like dropping and going up and dropping and going up. So.
Yeah, but you had like some pretty drastic temperatures as well.
I think that was probably the nail in the coffin. The last nail in the coffin there was the drastic weather.
I dropped out earlier, but when you were describing, you know, right at the very end of your modified intro, I was asking, and apparently I dropped out, but I was asking, now, is this when the left-hand animation on your screen on your dashboard showed the robot from Lost in Space waving its arms going, Roy Robinson?
It was. How did you know?
That's pretty good, Mike.
Warning.
You are screwed.
Danger.
Yeah. Yep. But I'm good for another 200,000 miles now.
Well, that's cool. I want to swing on by tomorrow. Take her for a beat run.
Yeah. There you go. Oh, man. All righty. Back over to you, Joel.
Yes. Well, as Barry had mentioned earlier, I had stopped over his place because I was in the neighborhood. Why was I in the neighborhood? Glad you asked. I was over at Dr. Kenny's clinic for the chronically ill, or in this case, slightly not working right, Rambo.
Oh, wait a minute. You didn't come over just to get me these Boston beans?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I picked those up specifically saying,
okay.
I'm going to stop
doing that, Barry.
But
you know, I've been looking for those since the last show you mentioned them. I haven't found them yet.
I just bought 5 bags today.
These guys have been killing me all show long, Michael.
I grew up
with this crap, and I can't eat them anymore.
I will send both you guys bags of these things, promise.
I can't eat them anymore. I'm a diabetic, you asshole.
Well, think non-sugary thoughts. And suck.
I love you.
So am I, and I just cut off 5 years of my life.
Yeah, but you got an insulin pump that can compensate. I don't.
I will definitely get a bag sent to you, Michael. A couple bags of these things packaged up and sent up to you.
They are young.
Cool.
They're awesome, Michael. You'll love them.
So on my way to go to Dr. Kenny's clinic, I said, you know what? I got to get some of these Boston baked beans. You know what I mentioned in the previous show where they usually have 4 bags on the top shelf, and I usually buy all 4. Well, this time I went in, they have 10 bags there. That's how they stock them. I think there was 7 bags that were on the shelf. I bought 5. And the girl just looked at me. She said, you really like these things, don't you? I said, yes, ma'am. Yes, I do. Keep them coming. So I get to Dr. Kenny's clinic. I throw Rambo up on the lift. Now, the intention was, and I bought brakes, rear brake shoes for him, and I bought Rambo always had this funny little idle. It would idle fine in any gear. But when you threw him in park, it would get what they it's known as the Ram hiss. So it'll idle, and it starts to sound like a severe vacuum leak. And, you know, you hear this, sass, and it would stumble. It wouldn't stall, but it was really close. Well,
how's that again?
Yeah, I'm not doing it again. So,
Rambo was built in the House of Slytherin.
Yes, I definitely built in the House of Slytherin there, and I went and diagnosed and replaced all the vacuum hoses and the classic. Here's another thing, Barty, you can write down on your list of things you could learn about from listening to late night QRM. If you're trying to diagnose a vacuum leak on any type of engine, doesn't matter what, so long as it's running, use a can of brake of carburetor cleaner and spray the carburetor cleaner around the suspect hose or suspect gasket. i.e. intake manifold gaskets or leaky vacuum hoses or vacuum ports. With the vehicle running and at idle, and you spray it around, and once it finds that leaky area, the engine will begin to stumble until it burns off the carb cleaner. And then that's how you can pinpoint where it's leaking from.
Oh, that's interesting.
It works on lawnmowers, tractors, any type of internal combustion engine that's running gas in the. So if it's running and you're at an idle, but you know there's a slight vacuum leak from somewhere, but you don't know where to start looking, take a can of carburetor cleaner and just start spraying it around the suspect vacuum areas or gaskets. When you hit that spot, the engine will go from an idle. It'll start to it'll stumble because it's drawing in that vacuum leak. It's drawing in the carb cleaner, which isn't combustible. It'll
That's pretty cool to know.
And then you'll be able to know, okay, it's leaking from here, and has a leak there.
Hmm. Awesome, Joe. Thanks.
Well, you're welcome. And so that being the case, it's I did that to Rambo and discovered it had a bad IAC, that's idle air control module, that's located on the back of the fuel injection on top of the plenum. And all
sure it is.
Yes, it is. And once you take the air cleaner off, and you look back there, and you can see this little round-looking black module with a plug going into it. And you think, oh, that's only got 2 screws, which happen to be Torx number 5. This ought to be a piece of cake. What a pain in the ass it is to get to those. So, and this truck doesn't have a lift kit. If it had a lift kit, it'd be a bigger pain in the balls. But long story short, take all that junk off the top, changed it right out, and said, excellent. Ran, idles good. I plugged in the computer, reset the code on it because it had a check engine light. And then from there, I decided brakes. Needs new rear shoes. Now, if you guys remember when we first moved in, I had an incident where the passenger side rear tire dismounted itself from the rear axle.
Yeah, that's never a good thing.
No, it is not. I also diagnosed why that happened when all the studs broke off.
And that would help.
Yeah. Well, yes, the studs broke off, and I found out, I believe, root cause why.
Yeah.
The tire that was mounted to the matching rims of that truck was three sizes too small.
Whoa.
I went and I looked. It was just recently I discovered this. Because that tire's been sitting in the bed of the truck, and the rim is shot. It's aluminum. The holes are all hogged out. I'm like, shit, I got to get another rim. And I started to look at the tire size on it, and I went, wait a minute. And I compared it to the other three. It's three sizes too small. Now, for those who don't know, you put two different tire sizes on opposite ends of an axle. All axles have limited slip, but what that does is severely hinders the timing of the limited slip rear end. We're putting power to the wheel that has traction. It throws it all off, which adds undue stress and torque to the smaller wheel, which probably is one of the reasons why it over-torqued and it broke itself free.
Wow.
And I was pulling a trailer with, 3,000 pounds on it. I did that 7 times.
Whoa!
Wow.
So, yeah, that was pretty cool. So I thought, when that dislodged itself and the drum came off, that's when I noticed, wow, these shoes are looking a little shitty. Well, that was, we moved it in August. Well, here it is February of the next year, and I said, okay, I guess it's time to put shoes on it. So, threw it up on the alignment rack, put it up in the air, took the drums right off, and went, boy, we just dodged a bullet there, because it had just the shoe material, which is bonded to the actual metal frame, the steel frame, had cracked off, and on one side had 8 cracks in it. Those are from heat.
Wow.
So, it was there. So, now, with new shoes, new IAC module, all the little tweaks and that I did, it goes like a stabbed rat and stops real good for the first time. So that was my Saturday, which explains why I'm exhausted, because it was a lot of work.
Yeah, really.
And going back to our super duper next subject, and super duper cold, what was it, a week and a half ago weather, I went out to fire up Goldfinger.
Goldfinger.
I love that. So
you hit that well, Barry.
Thank you. I was ready.
It shows.
I went out on that seriously, seriously cold weekend, fired up Goldfinger, and then, of course, just ran back into the house. Let it run. Turned the heat on. And, did it to all the vehicles. And, well, aside from the truck, which ran like idles like shit in park, so I had to sit there and, feather the accelerator at the time. But what I hadn't noticed is in Goldfinger, even though I had the defrosters on high, I had no heat. None. Mm. Now, let's think about this. It's minus 26 degrees with the wind chill factor, and there's no heat inside the car of any kind, aside unless I farted.
Oh, we know what that does.
And I went,
it kills a Prius air conditioning system.
Yes, it does. It blows the charge. Dun-dun-duns. So I thought, well, maybe it's just because it's so severely cold. So I'll worry about it in the morning. Well, the night came, no frozen pipes, knock on wood, so on and so forth. Go outside to fire up Goldfinger and fire the heat up, come back in, make my lunch for work. Run back outside 20 minutes later, jump into an ice cold car.
Oh, God. That sucks.
The engine is at 190 degrees Fahrenheit on the temperature gauge, and the inside of the car is blowing out ice cold air.
Oh, God.
And I'm
you're
thinking,
so
oh,
screwed.
Shit. One of the lines may be frozen going to the heater core. Well, let me try and drive it a little distance and see if it frees itself up or thaws out. Well, that was a nice thought. I made it from here at Studio FU all the way to Bennington, New Hampshire, which is about 20 miles away on the far side of Bennington, before I got so fucking cold I couldn't stand it anymore and turned the car around and came back home. I lost the feeling in my finger. I had gloves on.
Yeah, yeah. It was cold.
And I had gloves, two coats, and a hat and a scarf, plus blue jeans and boots. Lost the feeling in the tips of two fingers holding the steering wheel. And I'm like, it won't warm up. I cannot make it. And came back home, stood in front of the pellet stove for about, I think I almost sat on the damn thing for an hour. And finally, as my wife said, get under the blankets and warm up slowly. If you warm up too fast, that you're going to get, what the hell did she call those?
Yeah, she's right, though.
Yeah,
she's
get ice crystals forming. Not ice crystals, it's something else.
Yeah, but anyway, she's right. I don't remember what it's called either, but she's right.
So I got warmed up, and I thought, what in the fuck's wrong with this car? I mean, the temperature of the engine's just fine. So I ran outside, started the car, ran back inside with the heat blasting. I went out. It was working. It was hot in there. And I'm like, what the hell? So I got pissed off. It already has a new heater core in it. Dr. Penny's that in. So I thought, and I'm like, is the water pump working? Open up the radiator cap. See if I see any trickle, trickle, trickle go by. Nothing. Barely a trickle. I don't know. Uh-oh. Like, it's not overheating, so it ain't the water pump. And then, of course, what is it, folks? It's the $6 thermostat.
Oh, really?
Stuck partially open. Mostly closed.
Yeah.
So it restricted the flow with that extra cold just enough. I had no heat in there.
And you let the car sit, of course, it heats up more.
And it opened up just a little bit more. So the next time I went out, I had heat. So I called in work. I said to my boss, I ain't coming to work. I ain't got no freaking heat in this car. And I can't make that an hour and a half drive in a car in this weather with no heat.
Exactly.
So, you guys need me. Sorry, you know, so sad, but I ain't going to be there. And called up Dr. Kenny, and I said, dude, I got no freaking heat in this car. Now I do, then I don't, then I do, then I don't. And I said, I need to throw a stat. And he goes, bring your shit box down. Which is what we refer to everybody's car. Now, for those customers, for those people who don't know, when you bring your car into the repair shop, when you see broken cars every single solitary day, that's what you do, that's what you fix, that's what you repair. Very rarely do you find one where you go, ooh, ah, look at that, whoa. Because I wouldn't be seeing it unless it was fucking broken. So it isn't all that ooh and ah, now is it?
Well, when I bring the Prius there, it is.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. It has a shining light like the top of a Christmas tree right above it. Follows it around. But, so it's like, all right, bring this shit box in and let's get this thing tore apart and get it worked on. And sure enough, a $6.50 thermostat, plus I just put a new radiator cap on it, plus I back flushed it. That solved my problem. But I'll tell you what, 25 below with the wind, and it was like 20 or whatever the hell it was. It was so goddamn cold, I can't even remember that's how goddamn cold it was. with no heat in the car? Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, the next day you couldn't test it because it was 50 degrees the next day.
You know, that's the ironic part it was 46 damn degrees the next day.
Yeah.
But when I put that new thermostat in and fired it up, I put it out of the outside of the shop. That car's never had heat that goddamn high. I didn't know you're supposed to be able to break a sweat. I mean, I honestly, God, could break a sweat. It's so hot coming, the air coming out of those vents down. I went, wow. That's
damn,
that's
pretty, I could melt ice.
You fixed it.
Yeah, I could melt the ice on the windshield now. So it's he's all fixed up, and the lift kit's still on it. I'm looking forward to putting the full size or the bigger tires on it. But I'm not going to do that until I know we're not going to have any more ice. We're supposed to get snow later this week.
Yeah, they don't know how much or what, and it's supposed to go back up into the 50s again right after it. So.
Yeah, so yeah. It's just a goofy weather. I mean, it is what it is, but, you know, there's a saying, you know, some of our fellow podcasters, I hate those cliche sayings. Well, tough titty. I always use them, and it is what it is. Sorry, fellas. It's just sometimes that's the perfect fit. But, in any event, that's the end of it. That's all I got. I mean, between Goldfinger and Rambo, I think that was enough.
Michael, did you have anything? Because I know you didn't have a chance to put notes in.
No, I didn't have a chance to put notes in, sorry. But, no, everything's running. After that cold snap, I realized that although I have improved the heat in David's Jeep, it ain't improved enough. But it's running fine. The road to Saskatchewan is still closed to the truck. Truck is parked out by the garage. We shuttle back and forth using the Jeeps.
Hmm.
But, no, everything's running.
Wow.
No tractor, but everything else is running.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move into entertainment last month. Welcome to Entertainment Last Month, where we talk about shows that aren't so new. Well, they're new to us, and you probably saw them several months ago. But, actually, I have a podcast this week I'd like to talk about. And again, I'm going to refer to Scott, who actually told me about this podcast. And I believe it's out of Minnesota. And it's called Radio Icebox. And if you've never had a chance to listen to it, I'd give it a chance. I may have to go back and listen to the older ones because it's kind of interesting. I believe it's a pirate radio station in a small town called Icebox. And they run this radio station. And there's multiple stories because there's the story about the people running the radio station, quote unquote, with a bit of a sci-fi thing going on and mystery stuff. And then they actually have the shows that are on Radio Icebox, so it's kind of like shows within a show. Cool. And I'm finding it very interesting and quite entertaining. So go check it out. It's a good podcast, and like I said, now I need to go back and listen to the previous episodes. I don't know how old this thing is. It says it's on season one, so if it's season one, then I don't have that many to go back to listen to, but I'm finding it, it keeps my attention, it's entertaining to listen to, and I highly recommend it. So. Anybody got anything else for entertainment this week or last month?
No, not really, but that sounds interesting. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Michael.
The only other thing I was going to say is just bear in mind, although by the time this show comes out, they'll already be retired, but the last episode of The X-Files, the new X-Files, is this week.
Yes. And I watched it last week, and they had this new younger couple of agents. I have a feeling they may be trying to relaunch it. Which I thought the new actors did a good job. Mm-hmm. So it might work. That's all I can say is it might work. They
might.
Instead of what they did last time when they brought in new characters to take over, which were totally different characters, and the thing failed.
Doggett and the other one, yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately it failed miserably. They're making these characters be younger versions of...
Mulder and Scully.
Yeah, Mulder and Scully. So it may work. So
the same old formula with new faces.
Right, which is the best way to do it.
Yep.
If you're going to do it. Yeah. And and the only other thing I can say is, and this really doesn't have to do with TV shows, but rather watching TV. I noticed the other night, I've gotten into all the Chicago shows. They started with Chicago Fire. Now they have Chicago Med and they have Chicago PD, and they're all in the same universe, so you often see characters from one show on the other show and everything. It's, but I like them all. I've started gathering shows that I missed on the Magic Antenna, and I was watching them, and I said, wow, you know, not only is the show good, but it really looks good on my TV. And then I realized... the Magic Antenna had delivered me a 1080p version of it. And when I use Dish, yeah, not so much 1080p. They do either 720p or 1080i, which is kind of the same thing as 720p, right?
It's an interlaced thing.
Yeah, but I just said, wow, I don't know where they're getting this copy. Or where the Magic Antenna is finding this broadcast of the radios or of the TV show, but 1080p, it was fantastic. It really was. And for those that are watching The Expanse, hope you watched it. There is a season 2, but the season is over on it. So if you haven't caught it all the way to the end, you know, check to see if you can watch the back things, and you know, the first season's done. It was done several weeks ago. So just some news. I didn't realize that it was done. Somebody said, yeah, at work we were talking about it. And they said, yeah, that season finale was really good. I said, season finale? Yeah. And I said, oh, you mean the double show? And they said, yeah. I said, that was the season finale? They said, yeah. Damn. I was looking forward to some more. So, yeah. So anyway, okay. Anybody else?
I got nothing.
Okay.
Not me.
You're running late. So.
Of course we are.
What we're supposed to do.
Yeah. Why do you sound so surprised?
All right. We do have a musical guest. I pulled this one out of the 1980s. And it's a group, a British group called XTC, and their song Runaways. So with that, we want to thank all the military members out there, both CONUS and O-CONUS. Thank you. For some reason, pre-CONUS came into my head. I said, that's not right, pre-CONUS. CONUS and O-CONUS, and you O-CONUS guys especially, stay safe, and we hope you get home to your family and friends real soon. Until then, we'll keep the home fires burning for you. So, with that, from the Monadnock region in southwest New Hampshire, I'm Barry J.
And also from the Monadnock region in Studio FU, this is Joel.
And from central New York, this is Barry. Barty.
You don't know who he is.
I have an identity crisis. Michael.
And from the family truckster on his way back from a bowling alley, this is Michael, the virtual Uber.
In a dead zone.
Evidently.
All right, everybody, that's 207. We'll see you for 208 soon. Until then, here's XTC. We'll be right back. Samson, speak. Good boy.